Hello, everybody, and welcome to this special pre-election edition of Let's Weekend. I am your host with the most, Brandon Perkins, and joining me, as always, is the rest of the Let's Weekenders, Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and Chris Sologi.
Good evening.
Hello.
So, it's almost over, folks.
Yeah, by the time we reconvene next week, you will have elected a new president, hopefully.
Yeah, but she won't actually take... see what I said there? She will not actually take office until January.
Yeah.
But, it's going to be Tuesday, November the 8th. It's 4 days away.
Yep.
We are, of course, going to be talking about, you know, sort of just reminiscing on the election and talking about voting and all that stuff later on. But, of course, we're also going to have our usual stuff. And, of course, we're going to have yet another edition of Gamermag Remembrances, this time revisiting our most recent favorite, Super Play, with another issue, specifically this one revolving around Mega Man X. But before we get to all of that, I say we should go ahead and just sort of say what we've been doing this week. So, Phil, what have you been doing?
So I finished Rise of Empire, and I'm on the third book of the regular Revelation series, Heir of Navron. The second book kind of picked up so much momentum that it was over before I was aware of it. So... yeah, I kind of had to go straight into Heir of Navron, and it's basically picking up right where it left off, and it's, a lot of good stuff going on there. So other than that, I've been listening to a lot of music. I got a little stack of vinyl that came in, so, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, picked up, I got Rush 2112, got Alter Bridge to Blackbird, I got their newest one, The Last Hero on vinyl, I got ZZ Top's Eliminator, because that's a great album.
Mm-hmm.
Cornelius's album Phantasma, which is really, really weird and probably worth a listen because it's just strange music. And of course, I got a copy of Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, me and my mom have been enjoying that one. So,
mm.
Yeah, so lots of music this week. I also picked up Tremonti's new CD, Dust, which is a pretty solid. Does that. Oh yeah, and I've also been making myself sick by eating Halloween candy because Halloween was Monday. And having a bowl of little candy bars in the middle of the dining room table doesn't really help very much.
So. It's not walnut.
Yeah. Nope.
So yeah, it's been kind of a quiet week, but that's been pretty much what I've been doing. How about you guys?
All right, well, what about you, Patrick?
Well, I think I found my replacement for Bleach, at least for the time being. So far, it's only run 33 episodes, and it's on hiatus, I think. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's because the manga ended at the same time, or if they're just holding off to...
Arslan Senki, right?
Yes, it is.
Arslan's a.k.a. the Heroic Legend of Arslan?
Yes.
Okay, that might be because, first of all, The Heroic Legend of Arslan is actually based on a light novel series.
Yeah. Well, it's currently being remade in manga form, too.
Yeah, by Hiromu
Arakawa.
Yeah. Just so y'all know, it was originally created by Dr. Yoshiki Tanaka, same guy who created Legend of the Galactic Heroes.
Oh, nice.
Which explains why it's so damn good.
Yes.
Also explains the scale.
Yeah.
I absolutely recommend anyone to check it out. I'm not too far into it, but I already can tell I'm going to be very invested in it.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at least for the moment, I've found that good binge anime to follow, and hopefully the manga's ongoing, because I don't think 33 episodes is going to cut it for
me.
No.
Well, see, the thing is the original light novel series has only gotten to about 14 volumes. So, yeah, I mean, like, there was like almost like a 10-year divide between the 13th and 14th volume, so.
Ooh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then again, Tanaka is one of those guys who bounces around from different projects. I mean, it took, you know, Legend of the Galactic Heroes, it took about from like 7 years to finish that one.
Yeah.
And then I also got a well-timed piece of good news, because, like, the last I'd heard from one potential employer, Conservis, was that they were putting me on a 2-month wait list, that there were only two people ahead of me, and it moved fairly quickly, but I'd kind of just counted on not hearing from them for at least a little while.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, I had applied at Vivint as tech support against my better judgment. It turned out, like, yesterday I was kind of at wit's end. There was this, roofers were over here putting new shingles on the roof. I was just sitting here cooped up in my room at wit's end. It sounded like elephants were fucking 6 feet above my head. And yeah, I was just being driven nuts. I couldn't hear myself think. I couldn't focus to game or anything. Had nowhere to go. Get this phone call out of nowhere that was from Conservis asking me if I can start Monday. So that kind of brought me out of my borderline homicidal rage. Just,
can you start Monday? Yes. Yes, I can.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm glad that happened when it did, because I probably would have gotten a little bit unpleasant.
Yeah.
Just under the circumstances.
Mm. What will you be doing?
It's called missing bill investigation. So what this employer does is they take consolidated bills that electric companies, water companies send to apartment complexes that aren't set up for individual billing.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And find a way based on occupancy, size, other factors to divvy the bill up fairly among all the occupants. If something should happen to where they don't receive bills from, you know, from a client and don't have the data to go on to bill the, to bill the tenants, that would be where I would step in and try to figure out what happened along the way and, you know, try to get that information for the billing department.
Okay. So, gonna be...
so it is an office job, and I've yeah. wanted an office job for a long time.
Yeah, that's a good thing, because, I mean, regarding what they do, that probably means you have to deal with a few asshole landlords here and there.
You know, it, but the entity that I represent is on the same side, so it's not mm-hmm. going to be a conflictive sort of situation. It's just, hey, where is this? We need it before we can send the bill out. And obviously they're going to want to get their, you know, they're not going to want to eat the bill themselves. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay. So it's just going to be my job to track those down.
Yeah.
It's a bit of a pay cut compared to what I was doing at Walmart, but I'll take that pay cut to get away from Walmart.
Mm-hmm.
So just the whole starting Monday thing is a little nerve wracking. I think I'll manage.
Yeah.
Mm.
I'm sure you'll do fine.
Awesome. Alright. Alright then, what about you, Chris?
So I continue my little Amazon 99-cent movie rental viewing and watched Monster Money, which is the George Clooney and I forget who else is in it. Gus Fring is in it. He plays the police chief,
mm-hmm.
I guess. Yeah, it's pretty decent. It's sort of your typical thriller sort of movie about some guy holding your, like, overzealous financial talk show guy. His,
Oh, yeah,
I remember this movie. Yeah.
And, you know, tells him to put on a vest with explosives on it. Has the the detonator and all that in a gun, threatens to shoot him or blow him all up, all that sort of stuff.
Hmm.
And as a result of a glitch happening in the computers that causes an $800 million drop in this one company's stock. It was the hottest stock on the market. So lots of fallouts, revelations, all that sort of stuff. That's pretty decent.
Yeah.
Worth 99 cents.
Yeah.
And alongside that, I started to watch Dragon Ball Super on Crunchyroll.
Oh, yes.
Nice. So I only watched the first episode, and sort of the biggest bummer is obviously no English dub. So
that got announced today.
Yeah, they announced the English dub today. So,
and the other downside is on the Crunchyroll side, they only had the first 10 episodes, and then 47 to 64. But I guess they're going to be adding more.
Yeah,
they say about 10 episodes every Saturday.
So they'll be caught up pretty quick.
Yeah. So yeah, it's the one thing that sort of kills my buzz on this is having no Sean Schemmel or Christopher Sabat. I'd having to listen to high-pitched Goku, adult Goku.
Yeah.
See, that's what I grew up with, so I would be used to that. I
grew up with Toonami dub. So, yeah.
I would say I'm sorry, but it did get better over time.
I think it's a really good dub. And the show basically seems like it writes off GT completely.
Yeah, people pretty much just ignore that ever happened.
Yeah. GT is non-canon.
And it basically starts off with Goku is farming. Then Goten takes over and he starts training. And the training is just creating big craters in what's supposed to be their farm.
Mm-hmm.
And so then he realizes he's not going to make money off the farm. It's a stupid start, but... essentially, the episode doesn't really do anything. It's all sort of introducing characters back into it. We see Hercule, or Mr. Satan, and Boo, who the world has forgotten, nearly killed everybody.
Yeah.
through the Wish of the Dragon Balls. They introduced that at the very beginning. Sort of reminds you, hey, you probably haven't seen the end of this in 15 years. So yeah, they apparently gave him a peace reward of like 100 million zenny, and he's already stinking rich, so he's trying to give it away to one of the people that actually saved the world. I guess Vegeta turned it down because he's also rich, which I had almost forgotten that he's married to Bulma. And
yeah, he married into
obviously he's the heir of the Capsule Corporation, so he's rich, which is weird to think about him in that way when you realize where he started is trying to kill everybody.
Vegeta doesn't have a mustache in this one, does he?
He wasn't actually in the episode.
Oh.
It's literally Goku, Gohan, Videl, Mr. Satan, Boo, Goten, and Trunks.
Alright. Good.
And Chi-Chi. I guess all the characters that are in there. And so there's a little subplot of Goku and Videl are married now. Mr. Satan got him a new house to live in. Gohan's doing his nerd thing, studying up for whatever the hell he's studying up for. I don't know. He's just learning.
He's studying because Gohan.
Yeah.
Or so, you know, it's he's studying because you know if you've ever watched Team Four Star, it's because you know Chi Chi's probably there. Holding a gun to his head.
That too.
And so Goten and Trunks want to get them a present. And so they go to like a, I guess like a grocery store thing, or eavesdropping on people talking about good presents. They come up with the idea for spa water. So they go to the spa and it's like, oh, there's people on this water. We don't want this water. They just go to like a nearby lake and think it's also spa water. Try to get the water into a bottle, then a giant snake attacks them. They eventually defeat the snake, get the water back, and Vettel's like, oh, this is just tap waters. You know, has to play nice just so that she doesn't hurt their feelings and all that. At the end, Mr. Satan gives Goku the money, convinces him to take it. He didn't really want it, but then Goten convinces him that if he gets the money, he can go train. He wants to go train at the Kai's place.
Hmm.
For what? No reason, just to train. He's bored. Because that's Goku.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the whole episode. He takes the money. He's like, yeah, I get to go train now.
Okay.
And, yeah. So I'm definitely going to watch more of this. Seems like they're bringing the god into it. The Beerus. Dog god.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think the first, like, 47, 48 episodes or so are based on the two movies that came out right before Super.
Yeah, he's in the, like, the thumbnail picture on a bunch of these early ones, at least. Yeah, because the very beginning of the show is him at one of the random planets partaking in their food. Says it's pretty good and then just destroys half the world. Because it was too fatty. It's like, that's not healthy. So yeah, doing his dumb thing. So yeah, looking forward to more of it. Definitely makes me want to go back and watch all the rest of it. Just to dive right back into it.
If you want it in a more digestible form, I recommend Dragon Ball Kai.
Yeah, it's expensive as hell. It's like at least like $20-$30 per disc or whatever it is on Amazon from ice. I keep track of that.
Anime is expensive, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, but there's anime on Blu-ray is even more expensive.
Yeah. Yep.
For some reason.
So it's like if you're going to remake this whole series, make it look real nice, it's going to be super expensive.
Hmm.
Especially when they don't do sales on that stuff very often.
Yeah.
It's not being streamed anywhere?
You could probably subscribe to Funimation's thing and do that. Hmm. I'd probably just get the Blu-rays.
Yeah.
So I don't have to subscribe.
Yeah.
The main reason I was pointing that out is because it was lifted directly from the manga, so none of the filler is there.
Yeah.
None of it.
Yeah.
Right.
And as for other stuff, been playing more Trails in the Sky.
Nice.
I'm on chapter 4 now.
Yeah.
And all the weird stuff that goes on in 3 where it's like, oh, there's conspiracy stuff you've been suspecting is going on starts to get laid out right in front of
me.
And I'm curious to see where that goes. I just gotten to the point where you're right outside the Queen's castle. And that's pretty much it.
Yeah,
I found it interesting. They seem like they're going to change the way the chapter ends. It's like, oh, you're just going to fly to the next place. And nope. You're going to go back and go through the gate and all that. Also lose your two party members. And luckily, they don't Eris away all your gear that you got for them. So I got to pawn that off at the next chance to get some money back and upgrade all the gear for Estelle and Joshua. So already doing good. Just looking forward to playing more of that and seeing where that goes. And I've also been doing some other stuff. Messed around with the new Steam update that lets you use the DualShock 4 as a Steam controller surrogate.
Okay.
Which works pretty well. Basically, when you go to set it up, it does like the typical like emulator setup thing where it's like, press what's supposed to be the A button or the X button, all that sort of stuff. And somehow I did it right, and then somehow I deleted what the A/X button is supposed to do. So as I'm navigating the big picture interface, I can't select anything.
Whoops.
So I just sit there and pull up the mouse, and it's like, okay, I gotta fix this. Yeah, that works pretty well. Played some more Skyrim, got to the first village. with that, along the way I tried to kill the guide I had. I managed to beat him, but then he just bends on his knee and rests up and comes back ready to kill.
Yeah.
That was frustrating.
Hmm.
So I think from this point on, I'm going to create like a splinter save and use one for mods and the other one for the vanilla play.
Yeah.
And see what the hell they have for this game.
Hmm.
I know I mentioned a while ago being infatuated with Steam Powered Giraffe, and they have supposedly made a mod for either Skyrim or Fallout 4. I'm curious to see what the hell they would do with it. I think it's in Fallout 4. I might have to go try that one out. Just see what the hell they would do as like an official band mod. Skyrim's still pretty good. It doesn't really look that much different from going from the PC version to the supposedly upgraded PC version.
Yeah, there's some, you know, better lighting effects and stuff in there, but yeah, it's not much.
Yeah. It's like this, was it 2011 game?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
As it looks like an upgraded 2011 game.
Yeah.
Mm. Like a PCS 2011 game or the oxen that are in that first village.
Mm-hmm.
They're real blocky looking. All that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So it's a pretty cool game. So look forward to playing more of that. And, yeah, how about you, Brandon?
You mentioned Trails in the Sky, and everybody can always use more tits.
Yep.
So I decided to go and get involved in some tox. yes, I finally got and started Trails of Cold Steel. Long after I should have.
Yes.
Or as I also like to call it, Christ Who's Gonna Die First.
Was it co-written by George R. R. Martin?
But apparently the people who were making I'm guessing whoever it is over at Falcom who was trying to make the game world look relatively Western-y was having some fun with the book covers. because that's what shows up on one of them. Trails of Cold Steel. I gotta say, this game actually hooked me a lot quicker than Trails in the Sky did when I first played it.
It has a more marketable look.
Yeah, personally, I think it just begins better. Yeah, it just, you know, and I say that, you know, but even though I love Trails in the Sky, but this one, you know, I guess maybe it's just 3D has its perks, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So basically those who don't know, this particular, game in the Legend of Heroes series, it takes place in the Erebonian Empire, which is one of the countries that neighbors the Liberal Kingdom. It is unlike the Liberal Kingdom, which is a constitutional monarchy. The Erebonian Empire is pure autocracy, like 100%. And, it's very similar to very, very similar to like late 19th century Prussia.
Okay.
It's got all that, you know, there's also that, there's something to be said about how good, you know, school stories can work in these type of games. Mm-hmm. I don't know why that hooked me so quickly, but it did. you know, you're basically playing this dude named Reen, who is, you know, he is part of a group of what's called Class 7 for the Thor's Military Academy. Basically how this works is that there are technically six classes. They're the first two, class one and two, are for members of the nobility. and 3 through 5 are for who are commoners. And then there's Class 7, which for some reason skipped number 6. I don't know why. But basically, it's meant to be a mixture of all backgrounds, so it's made up of both commoners and nobles.
It's an experiment.
Yeah. And it causes some tensions pretty quickly.
Yeah, you should never skip 6. Just ask Samsung how well that went.
Yeah. But basically what happens is they all get together, and basically the idea is that, you know, they basically tell them, you know, your training is going to be particularly hard, harder than all the others. And, we're fixing to drop you into the middle of a dungeon. Have fun. So basically the way the game operates, at least so far, as I've gotten, is you basically have your school stuff, and then you have a free day where you basically go around performing tasks, sort of like how in Trails in the Sky you get requests from the Bracers Guild. Here you basically get requests for the school, from the student council. And usually it's, most of them are just sort of things like, go get this and help me find this. Or you end up going back into the abandoned schoolhouse, which is basically where the first dungeon that I mentioned takes place in, because for some reason, whatever's going on underneath that schoolhouse, the layout keeps changing.
Gee, that sounds familiar.
Yeah. You meet all these different characters, and yeah, they're all of different backgrounds. A couple of them are nobles, and some of them are commoners. And like I said, at first they don't really get along. Most of them get along pretty easily at first, except two of them, which is Eusis and Machias. Eusis is I think it's an Aldebaran. Is that the name of the family? Eusis Aldebaran, which is like one of the big noble houses of the great four noble houses in Erebonia. And then Machias, who is the son of one of the governors, who is a reformist. There's basically this massive sort of civil divide within the country. That's where there's basically the reformist and the noble alliance. The nobles are trying to keep, you know, the caste system in place and, you know, to keep their power through posterity. And the reformists, of course, are trying to reform that. So obviously these two aren't going to get along.
Yeah.
Let's see. There's also Fee, who is this weird chick who acts like a cat for some reason and is apparently really good with explosives.
Okay.
You don't question it. You just go.
Yeah, don't question. It makes sense later on. There's all the weird faculty, and all the other students, you know, they've all got their respective clubs. The chick who runs the literature club is really into boys' love. Jeez. You know, the other members of the club are constantly scolding her. It's like, you need to stop.
With that.
Oh, and there's also their instructor. And I don't think it's that much of a shock, because the way she acts, most people will be able to figure it out. She's a Bracer. I mean, it's pretty obvious. If you've played Trails in the Sky already and you see how other Bracers are, it's pretty obvious she's a Bracer.
Yeah.
And they call her the Purple Lightning, which... Didn't she actually show up in... Didn't she show up in Trails in the Sky?
I believe so.
Because I know some of the characters from Trails in the Sky cross over into this. I mean, we already met one of the. Well, I won't spoil it, but
yeah.
And yes, because this is Erebonia, you know who is going to show up towards the end. Yeah. And he ends up playing a big part in it. I haven't actually gotten to that part of the game, and honestly, I haven't really read about it. It's just you kind of know. Yeah, you kind of figure it as like he's got to be involved in this somehow.
Makes it pretty clear.
Yeah.
Now, what I want you to do, Brandon.
Yeah.
As soon as you finish Trails of Cold Steel.
Yeah.
Go back and do New Game Plus runs through Trails in the Sky, both games, and see how much shit they foreshadowed as far back as that.
Yeah. Oh, and let's... and I've also, from people who've already played both Cold Steel games, I have been told that the first Trails of Cold Steel ends on a better conclusion, not as bad of a cliffhanger. At least not one that is as infuriating as the end of Trails of Cold Steel 1 was. I mean, Trails in the Sky was. But I have been told that Trails in the Cold Steel 2 kind of ends with a massive gut punch. So I've been warned ahead of time. Because basically, in Trails of Cold Steel, Erebonia has basically descended into full-out civil war. But yeah,
Falcom is already selling their Cold Steel 3 calendars.
Yeah, they're already there. They've been working on them. They've been working on Cold Steel 3 since last year. So, what I've been told. So what the way the game is structured, at least so far, is you start out, you know, school days, then you do the stuff with the student council, and while you're doing that, you try and, you know, interact and bond with your fellow classmates. Which is important because of the link system that is heavily involved in the combat system in this game.
Sounds really familiar.
And yeah, you basically have to go around and interact with them. And as I have been told that eventually for the female character, some of the female characters, this does eventually blossom into a romance subplot.
Naturally.
And it's not just the one chick; it's a couple of them. Then you do that, and then once that's over, you then go on to what they call the field study, which is the more familiar sort of thing of how Trails in the Sky would go.
Yeah.
You know, you go in, you go to town, you get requests to do, including one big one, and then you go out and about and do whatever, and then come back, and then plot happens.
Yeah.
Yep.
So that's Trails of Cold Steel.
You liking it?
Very much enjoying it. I mean, you mentioned that whole thing, but yeah, it's basically Persona 4.
Except without any weaponizing of your inner self.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
Like I said, I don't know why, but that whole school angle always hooks me. Every time. I don't know why. It did. This game focuses a lot on character development.
Yeah.
I am expecting good things and probably some stuff that's going to, probably going to leave me weeping in a corner in a fetal position. Yeah. So
just keep in mind that the ending of the first Trails of Cold Steel is supposed to coincide with a game that hasn't been out yet that, in Japan, everyone played first.
Yeah, is it the I'm pretty sure that's the that one. The game you're talking about came out in 2011, right? I think it was called. God, I'm trying to remember what it was called,
Over here, it would be Trails of Azure.
Yeah, Trails of Azure. That's what I was thinking. I'm familiar with that one. Was it Azure no Senki or something like that?
No, it was Aono Kisaki.
Okay, yeah. I know what you're talking about. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, it was 2011. That's kind of surprising, actually.
Yeah.
Thought it was
They, they're pretty tight. You got to admit the fact that they, you know, their budgets are lower than a lot of other game studios means that they can put these games out quicker.
Yeah.
It's too bad that doesn't turn into faster localizations. One closer to simultaneous.
At least the localizations we get are good, so.
From what I've been told, Xseed says that if Trails of Cold Steel 1 and 2 sell well, they'll do Trails of Azure. So.
Well, they got to do Trails of Zero first.
Okay.
Azure is the second part of a two-parter.
So
you have the school motif for Cold Steel. For Trails to Zero and Trails of Azure, collectively known as the Crossbell Saga.
Yeah, that's Crossbell. I'm familiar with Crossbell.
Yeah. It's a police motif.
Yeah, the whole sort of detective thing. So in the sort of Trails universe, Crossbell is sort of this little city-state that basically gets kicked around by the other two major countries in the region.
Yeah.
For whatever reasons, the Erebonians and the Republic keep wanting to chip away at its territory.
As they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alright. So and of course I've also, because again, I've been playing Eco. That is a game that, you know, at times it is absolutely serene. And other times, you are in full 100% panic mode.
Yep.
You know, that's about all you can say about it.
Yep.
All right, so that's it for me. Has anybody else got anything they want to add?
Just an observation while we were going over the top of the show. I was watching NHL scores. What on earth got into the Montreal Canadiens tonight? They were doing so well. We now have a final score. They lost 10-0 to the Columbus Blue Jackets.
10-0? That's
10-0.
That's like almost Patrick Roy levels of ouch.
Yeah, the game that saw him leave the Canadiens.
Yeah,
was Al Montoya between the pipes tonight. But, wow. I mean, this was a team up near the top of the standings. That just really surprised me.
Yeah. Kind of imploded tonight.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, then. So, I guess with that out of the way, we'll move on to everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. So, I'll do another anime one. This time, it's actually one I'd kind of been wanting to talk about more in depth a lot, but the chance never came up, or the chance would come and then we'd have some massive technical difficulties. And I'll be honest, when we do get the chance, we'll probably go into this topic a lot more in depth in the future, but since, you know, the time is right and I got the opportunity, I'll go ahead and bring it up. So, when anybody thinks of anime, there's a few things that usually get, you know, associated with it. A few concepts, usually, you know, schoolgirls and sailor uniforms and short shirts. It's the big eyes. It's the weird gigantic kimono eyebrows that occasionally show up.
Spiky hair.
But probably the one that really hit, at least in the West, the first hit us the hardest, is Mecha, giant robots.
Yes. We like giant robots.
They're fun. And they're an extreme waste of resources.
It's true.
But they're fun. So, you might be wondering, well, where the heck did this whole giant robot thing come from anyway? You know, like, why did that specifically take off in Japan just complete so well and such to an extent that it became a defining feature of their pop culture? Well, it's not a terribly complicated story, but it is a little convoluted. The first thing you need to know, of course, is that the concept of giant robots isn't something that is unique to Japanese science fiction. Giant robots were a fairly common part of pulp sci-fi over here in the U.S. In fact, just as a good example, a classic, I believe it was Astounding Science Fiction, a cover art for it would eventually become the cover art for a certain album by Queen called News of the World, which features a giant killer robot. And that particular piece of artwork is from the 1930s. But when it comes to Japan, when we think of what's like the first sort of image of a giant robot, well, I've done a little bit of research here and there, and I think I finally came up with it. Well, let's see if I can finally get the damn thing to load. But yeah, so the first image of a sort of a giant robot, especially in a manga or anime sense, actually goes back to 1943, during the sort of the downturn of the war at the time. It was not going well for Japan, as everybody probably knows.
Yeah.
And so there was a lot of sort of ways in their popular government-approved entertainment that they would, you know, sort of go with that. Well, not go with that, but, like, sort of, you know, deal with it, you know, get out their frustrations and stuff. And one of them just so happened to be a particular drawing, cartoon, that was published in the 1943 edition of a magazine called Monthly Manga Comic Magazine. And here it is. It's a cartoon called The Science Warrior Appears in New York. Here it is right here. We can put that in the show notes if you want. There it is. There's the very first giant Japanese mecha. Yeah. As you can see, it's basically a giant sort of steam knight stomping around New York.
Yeah.
Well, Manhattan. Again, you know, this is sort of them sort of dealing with the fact that the war kind of sucks right now.
Yeah, kind of did.
And you can see the frustration just sort of splattered all over the page there.
Yeah.
Now, however, when we're thinking of giant robots in a modern sense, we're thinking of the kind that are giant and controlled. Now, the first sort of giant robot in manga after the particular instance I just showed that is in a popular manga sense shows up in some Astro Boy stories from, of course, Osamu Tezuka, a.k.a. the god of manga. But when we're thinking of giant controllable giant robots, that actually goes back to a manga known as Tetsujin 28 Go, or as we know him over here in the U.S., Gigantor. He was created by Mitsuhiro Yokoyama, and in fact, he was a contemporary of Tezuka's. They actually, both of these series actually were being published around the same time. And in fact, both of them ended up being some of the first commercial anime in to be produced for Japanese television. Funny enough. Now, here's the thing, though. First of all, Tetsujin 28 was, yes, he was a giant robot that could be controlled, but he was not done, he didn't do that in the sense that we imagine him. Basically, he was controlled by a little boy named Shotaro, who basically had what they called the control box, which was basically a remote control that he operated remotely. And basically, Yokoyama, he would revisit the sort of giant robot motif on and on throughout his career until he died in the 90s in a house fire. But it kept the same concept. Giant robot controlled by little boy with remote control. Most famously, other than Tetsujin 28 himself, was his cult series Giant Robo, which would later on inspire probably one of the greatest and most batshit insane OVA series ever made. So that's sort of the sort of got the popular idea of the giant robot off the ground. But that's not the type of giant robots we think of when we think of anime. We're thinking about giant robots that can be ridden in and piloted from the inside.
Yeah.
You know, we're thinking, you know, Gundam, Escaflowne, Macross. And in fact, but the guy who came up with this is in fact the manga king of mayhem himself, Go Nagai, with his original early 70s creation, Mazinger Z.
See? I know he, things.
Yeah. Basically, he got the idea when he was, you know, getting prepared to cross the street in Tokyo, in downtown Tokyo, and he was having to wait because of a traffic jam, and he just had the idea spring these days. He's like, I bet some of these folks in these cars wish that, you know, those cars could grow legs and walk over them. And he was like, inspiration! So, that's basically, he went back, and he said, like, you know, because he wanted to do a robot series, because, you know, Nagai was a huge Tezuka fan, and he wanted to, sort of go along with his idol. And he came up with that unique concept of a giant robot that could be piloted from the inside. Now, in Mazinger's case, it was inside his head.
Yeah.
Which
is really not the greatest place, to be honest.
No.
But
it had this weird thing where, the pilot would have this little sort of a pod that would fly through the sky and then could sort of set down inside of the head of Mazinger. And he'd get started. On a side note, he also helped create the concept of the other major giant robot thing, which is the Combiner robot. When he helped, at least that's what people think, create Getter Robo. Although, in hindsight, Getter Robo was more Ken Ishikawa's creation, but whatever. And then finally, in the late 70s, we would finally have Sunrise and Tomino and all those guys get together, and they created Mobile Suit Gundam. Wherein, for the first time, a giant robot wasn't just this sort of magical being, like this amazing thing. It was actually a giant machine that looked like it could function and was part of a sort of realistic plot.
Yeah.
Also happens to be one of the best anime ever created. Like, its universe is just, it's amazing, but that's another story for another time.
Yeah.
So, that's basically how the giant robot, as we know it, basically came into existence.
Yeah.
It was a combination of a couple of different creators sort of building off of each other. Until it eventually became the thing we know today.
Yeah.
And that,
where
ladies and gentlemen,
boob missiles come from? That's another.
That's just a Nagai thing. Nagai, for those who don't know, Nagai is also the guy who created Cutie Honey and Devil Man. So, perviness is kind of his trademark. That, folks, has been yet another edition of Brandon's Random Factoid.
Cool.
Giant robots are fun.
Yeah.
They make great toys.
Yep.
I think that might be the reason why they took off, so...
Yeah, probably.
Merchandising, motherfucker!
Yep.
All right. So, on to our next segment. Oh, boy. Asshole of the Week. You guys who saw the show notes probably... who are with me on this cast already know, before we had this entered in, I just basically wrote, fuck this week.
Yeah.
Because this particular week,
for options.
Yeah, this particular week was just overflowing with assholeness.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew it was going to get bad the closer we got to the election, but holy shit.
It was like they were pushing a ball of shit up the hill and somebody slipped and it's rolling back down.
Yeah.
Spreading shit all over the damn place.
Yeah. First, we had some asshole burn down a black church and then spray paint vote Trump on the side of it. We had a dude hold a couple of kids at gunpoint because he thought they stole his Trump sign. They had the dude posting illegal Trump signs near places where you're not supposed to put campaign materials and, lined the signs with razor blades because he's just a particular brand of asshole. There's various stuff from the Trump campaign themselves, from people within the Trump support base. It's just all Trump. Just, it's getting bad.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we finally decided on one particular very... mostly because of just how nefarious it is and how it reveals a rather unpleasant truth about the modern FBI. We're talking about Director Comey, the guy who's director of the FBI, basically interfering in the election by announcing that we may have some more stuff about Hillary Clinton and her emails. We're not sure. We're not talking, but we want you to know.
Yeah.
This is after announcing, after they made their decision in June that they weren't going to do any more investigation. Or at
least... Yeah, they said, look, she screwed up and she was stupid, but she didn't do anything technically illegal, so...
It was the same with some of Trump's legal shit, too.
Yeah, by the way, just so you don't know, Donald Trump's also in deep shit with the FBI for some other email stuff, and this one has to do with the lawsuits involving Trump University and some other shit.
And so basically the Senate and FBI has been like, we're going to put this stuff on hold until after the election.
Nope! Because then Comey decides to poke his head in, and he's like, oh, guys, something or other. Bye.
Yeah.
And lets the media basically run away with, oh, the Hillary Clinton email investigation's back on.
But the thing is, the actual emails they ended up investigating didn't even involve her.
No.
They involved fucking Anthony Weiner.
And his wife, well, now ex-wife.
Yeah.
So,
it's come to reveal that there are people in the New York office of the FBI who are apparently trying to do everything they can to make sure that Hillary Clinton doesn't win the election.
Which is not what they're supposed to do.
No.
Yeah.
It's supposed to be impartial.
It's actually a violation of the Hatch Act. It is very clearly illegal. Yeah.
Then you got Rudy Giuliani bragging about having these connections.
Yeah, because he's Rudy goddamn Giuliani, and he's
like,
an asshole.
I saved us from 9/11. No, I didn't do anything.
No, you didn't. He didn't do shit.
That's what he's been riding.
See, I'm
on
sick.
For the last 15
I am.
Years.
Yeah, he has, and I'm fucking sick of it. He didn't do shit. He showed up for a couple of photo ops, and that was that.
Throughout a first pitch.
Yeah.
Although that was Bush. He was there.
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, but it's time that people, we can't let him coast on that shit anymore. No. Okay?
Not with what he's been doing the last 6 months.
Well, yeah, not even that. He, you know, that whole, yeah, he was the mayor on 9/11. I don't give a shit. You didn't do anything. Were you there picking through the rubble, helping people find their dead relatives? Were you the one that was facing, you know, having to breathe all that asbestos and shit? And now dealing with mesothelioma?
Don't think so.
Fuck no.
He was there for the photo
fuck
ops.
Giuliani.
Claiming Hillary wasn't there when she was standing next to him.
Yeah. And she did a fuck lot more than she... She barely did anything herself, and she did a fuck lot more than you did, Giuliani.
She doesn't have the direct responsibility for it that he does.
Right.
Cleaning up.
But, yeah, anyway, so... It's exposed something really problematic about the FBI as it exists now. There's some very partisan parts of it that have explicitly been trying to manipulate our election. Yeah. And that is a scary thing.
Yeah.
I mean, you can look back when he announced, like, yeah, we haven't found any incriminating things to actually prosecute Hillary Clinton on. Like, he had a press conference to announce this. That's not what they're supposed to do at all.
No.
It's supposed to be on the down low. Now he's like, fuck it, we're gonna tell everybody.
God damn it. Well, it's almost over, folks. We'll talk about that in a little bit and a little later, but just something a little bit on the lighter side. A random fan, don't know who, but when the Bills and the Patriots were playing each other, somebody just threw a giant rubber dildo on the field.
There's a good video on this Twitter Moments thing of right behind these people. So you can see the video from the crowd going onto the field, and the players see it. They're walking away. Then the umpires have to deal with it. And the umpire's like, hell no, I'm not picking this up. Proceeds to just try and kick it off the field as everybody's just going nuts.
It looked like one guy actually had to move while running just to keep from, like, rolling his ankle. And I remember posting when it happened on Facebook to Brandon, wondering how exactly this meshed with our whole fuck the NFL narrative from a couple shows.
Well, you know,
ago.
There's that classic, you know, George Carlin bit, you know, fuck them in the ass with a big black dildo and then break it off and beat them with the rest of it.
And I guess there's a quote from Tom Brady. The dildo, I guess somebody got a picture close up, says Brady's dildo on it. So they wrote that, and so they asked him about that after the game. He's like, I did see it. Yes, I did. I thought it was funny the ref didn't want to pick it up. Only in Buffalo.
Oh, God. All right.
Moments in sports.
Well, okay.
Yeah,
so
if you thought there wasn't fun in the NFL, there you go.
Yeah. All right. So, all right, next story. We got here, oh, Lord, her name's back in the news, but at least for a good reason. Kim Davis. We all remember her, even though we wish we couldn't. We wish we could, you know, just blight her name from the collective memory.
Yeah.
Kim Davis, for those who don't remember, she was the crazy Jesus freak who refused to give same-sex couples their legally obligated marriage papers.
Yeah.
Basically didn't do her job, was fined, then finally put in jail for a little while. She put herself up on her cross and made herself a big martyr, or at least tried to, and a certain small part of the population went along with it. Everybody else just thought she was a fucking joke. Well, folks, it looks like she's going to be on the hook for some legal fees over trying to obstruct same-sex marriage.
Yeah, that shit don't cost a dollar.
Yeah.
Mm. All right, so, Chris, was this you?
No.
Okay.
It was me.
All right, let's go ahead and sort of take a look and see what it has to say. Okay. and this is from Reverb Press, by the way. Kim Davis, a Kentucky County clerk, made the news last year because she refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples and was subsequently sued by the couples. Now she's whining because she doesn't want to pay the legal fees incurred by the couples who sued her. The couple's lawsuit wended its way to the U.S. Supreme Court and back, and Davis lost every single time. She even wound up going to jail for 5 days on contempt charges before Kentucky's legislature mooted the point by removing the county clerk's names from marriage licenses. In August, U.S. District Judge David Bunning dismissed the couple's suit against Davis because the legislature resolved the issue. Even so, the altered marriage licenses don't change the fact that this woman refused to do her job and forced the couples to sue in order to claim their civil right to marriage, said lawyers for the couples. Says here, courts recognize that when successful civil right plaintiffs obtain a direct benefit from a court-ordered victory, such as in this case, they can be entitled to their legal expenses to deter future civil rights violations by government officials. William Sharp, legal director of the Kentucky ACLU and one of the lawyers of the couple, said in a statement. Monday, Davis's lawyer filed a legal response asking Bunny to deny the request for legal fees because, of course. Roger G. Gannon of the Liberty Council, which is neither for liberty nor is it really a council.
Yeah.
A religious advocacy organization that's been designated as an anti-LGBTQ hate group by the Southern Poverty Law Center, wrote that the couples aren't entitled to legal fees because the case was resolved by the legislature. And Rowan County filed a response noting that whatever Bunning's decision is regarding the legal fees, the county government shouldn't be forced to pay. Davis is an elected official, and she wasn't acting on behalf of the county when she refused to issue the licenses. And the county's fiscal court dropped the ball by not controlling the internal operations of the office, wrote Jeffrey C. Mando, who's an attorney for Rowan County. To be honest, I can't completely fault them for that. You know, it's not her fault this woman decided to act the Jesus freak like that.
Yeah.
County clerks are not employees of the county, but instead are the holders of elective office pursuant to the Kentucky Constitution, he wrote. Despite all this, it's unlikely that Davis will be forced to pay up, Queerty notes. Right now, it's not clear who will be responsible, and unfortunately, the county will likely have to fork over the payment. Now, that just sucks. Yeah. But that's the lesson voters need to keep in mind when they vote. But a homophobe in office who violates the law, and you may have to fork over your taxpayer money for the litigation they spawn. And there will be a lot of legal goings-on in regards to the filing. Questions regarding who will be responsible for footing the bill depend on the way in which the case was dismissed and will also depend on the changing relationships of the parties involved, which means it's likely going to be months before a ruling is handed down. It's a shame that taxpayers will have to pay the bill for Davis's whiny bigotry. This woman undoubtedly caused a lot of sadness and depression for same-sex couples wanting to marry just like anyone else. Quite frankly, she should fit the bill for this because the lawsuits would never have happened if Davis had just done the job she was elected to do. She caused all of this trouble all by herself and hurt people in the process. Shame on her.
Some people are horrible.
Somehow I suspect she's going to end up on the hook. Just...
Well...
Somebody will probably back her up and help her out.
Yeah. I would say she would at least be able to make a comfortable living now on the evangelical circuit, but that particular group is shrinking fast by the day, so...
Mostly dying off.
Mm-hmm. And this election pretty much proved that the Christian right is officially dead.
By the same token, I'm sure there are a bunch of fiscal conservatives who aren't going to be too thrilled about this.
No, they aren't.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe this will cause some kind of movement. between the two entities.
Yeah. Yeah, hopefully. Mm. All right. So, next story. The sports event of the year, nay, possibly the decade. The Chicago Cubs finally broke their 108-year losing streak and won the World Series.
Yay. Question?
Yeah, as somebody who never really got into baseball as much as my family was, but was still raised around it, for one thing, my grandmother, who was the one who, the big baseball influence around me, Dodgers fan through and through, but she also had an appreciation for the Cubs and really would have wanted to have seen this. She missed it by 6 years. Mm. But I still remember just as a kid sitting there in the kitchen watching the baseball games with her and developing an understanding of the game and appreciation for it, even though I kind of went into a different direction as I grew up toward hockey and everything. If you somehow find a way to watch at the very least the 9th and 10th innings of that game, do it, because that is by far the highest level baseball I've ever seen in my life and probably ever will.
Yeah. A friend of mine basically said,
put on a clinic.
Yeah. Because my a friend of mine was watching the game, said basically went through about 4 or 5 heart attacks because the Cubs kind of won that game by the skin of their teeth.
Yeah.
The
2-run homer in the 8th, it just completely changed the entire momentum of the game.
And if you saw where that hit the camera guy in the left field wall. He hit the camera. He fell over. The camera just goes spinning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this home run derby type of hit. It's like ding, 1,000 points.
Oh man!
But I think it was just because I think it was just because of my grandma that I felt almost obligated to tune in for that game, and I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
End of the game 7 of the NBA Finals where. The last 4 minutes, nobody scores for the first 3 of those last 4 minutes. The teams are just completely stumped trying to get the ball into the net. And then Cleveland sinks a 3 and just gets some amazing defensive stops to keep Golden State from tying it up or getting the lead.
Otherwise known as a largely defensive affair.
Mm-hmm.
For 2 of the top scoring teams in the league.
Yeah.
Sort of the iconic way for that series to end. That was the same for this, where there was a rain happening at the bottom of the 9th and threatened to have a longer delay. Because Cleveland is on the eastern half of the state. Mm-hmm. And on the western half, where Toledo is, there's this huge thunderstorm heading straight east, right towards the city, probably an hour away.
Mm.
You got this game going into extra innings. It's like, fuck, this game better end now or it's going to be going into rain delay for hours. This game started at 8 o'clock and this is past midnight. They're getting into extra innings.
Yeah.
Mm. So the game is never going to end because that's how the world ends. It's a baseball game that never stops.
All right. All I know is Chicago basically became a citywide party the day after.
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't even the day after. It was they gathered around Wrigley Field. And there were riot cops there and everything just to make sure everyone was behaving themselves.
Yeah.
But
because this is Chicago, after all.
Yeah, for the parade, they dyed their river blue. Then I guess some people decided to jump into the river. From what I've heard, that river is completely filthy.
I wouldn't be at all surprised.
So they probably got some some new reasons to go to the doctor right afterwards. That's the same river they dye green every St. Patrick's Day.
Yep.
Oh, dear.
God damn it.
All right. Okay. So, in another sports story, and this one's...
sucks.
Yeah. The Harvard men's soccer team had their season canceled. The reason? Well, I'm going to tell you. This is from the Crimson.
That's their school paper.
Yeah, the Harvard Crimson. Harvard has canceled the men's soccer team season after an officer of general counsel review found that the team continued to produce vulgar and explicit documents rating women on their perceived sexual appeal and physical appearance.
Yeah, the first evidence of this was in 2012. Found out that, they kept doing it every year since then.
Yeah.
Even this year.
God damn it.
And is this after they've already been told to knock it the fuck off?
Yeah, probably.
Oh my God.
Harvard is like the waspiest of the Ivy League schools in the country. Actually, that would be Yale. But God damn it.
This is Harvard, like one of the top private schools in the country.
Mm-hmm.
These are supposed to be some of the smartest people that we have, and they're doing the same shit that every other school does.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's, and the thing is, there's the college sports culture just cultivates this shit. You know, fucking hell.
Especially in the Ivy League, there's always that sense of entitlement that they've got. And
yeah, there's all that class bullshit, and you know, these, you know, most of these dudes are wealthy, come from wealthy, well-off families.
Yeah.
Now I think obviously to participate in sports in Harvard, you do have to have a certain academic standard, right?
Yeah. I think so.
Like, yeah. To be at Harvard, you have to have a certain academic standard.
Yeah, pretty much proves that intelligence doesn't necessarily equal common sense, does it?
Nope.
Yeah.
Or class.
Yeah.
Or class, or just being a decent fucking human being, apparently.
Yeah. It's funny, though, because rating the attractiveness of women is how Facebook started. So.
Yep. Thanks, Mark Zuckerberg.
That was, what, a Harvard product?
No, that wasn't Harvard. I think that was...
Yale?
Yale?
No, Zuckerberg was in California, so I think it was Berkeley.
Berkeley, that's right.
Yeah.
I don't know, whatever was in the movie.
Yeah, but...
And I guess they're trying to figure out, do more investigation, see, are they doing on the other sports teams as well?
Probably.
Probably. Harvard's got an image to maintain, and when shit goes down, they tend to get pretty quick on cleaning house. So some heads probably rolled.
Seasons. And I guess part of these ratings is they also assigned a sex position to these women. Oh,
dear God.
And if you want to see how seriously they take this, the men's soccer team is first in the conference and was getting ready to go into the tournament soon. So
not anymore.
They had bigger balls to cancel this than pretty much any of the public schools out there would. Say, oh, we're going to take a look at this. We'll get back to you later.
It's like, nope,
maybe after the tournament.
Yeah, you gotta really, like, if you gotta have some major balls to take a stand like that. I mean, you know, I think it was like on another sport, but in a similar thing. I think it was Vince Lombardi when he was coaching one of those teams, you know, and it was Lombardi was one of those dudes who did not tolerate any type of racial prejudice inside his team. And yeah, there was this one really big game that one of his teams were supposed to play, and because of some racial bullshit that was going on between the white and black players, he just straight up forfeited the game. He's like, look, fuck it. You guys are going to get along or you ain't playing ball.
Yeah.
But, yeah. So, now, it's that time.
Yep.
Our long national nightmare is almost becoming different in 4 days. So, on November 8th, Tuesday, citizens all over America, if they haven't already done the early voting, which there has been a lot of early voting already done.
Yeah, like unusually large amount.
20 voting. Million.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, some of them tried to do it twice, but...
Yeah, one of them being a Trump supporter.
Yeah.
And particularly in Florida, a good chunk of the early voting has already been done.
Yeah.
There have been more Latin voters doing the early voting than did
Latino,
all of the 20s.
Latino and Latino voters, yeah.
And yeah. All of 2012.
Gee, I wonder why.
Yeah, and they're all voting for Donald Trump. Yeah.
But yeah, so on November 8th, Americans will be going to the polls to choose between our two primary presidential candidates, Democrat Hillary Clinton and Republican Donald Trump. And we all have to ask ourselves, how the fuck did we get here?
We've witnessed the complete and utter breakdown of the American political system this year.
All right. So before we do that, we might probably should sort of give sort of an overview of what America was like going into this process when the nominees first started stepping forth. So we had, obviously, our president has been Barack Hussein Obama, Democrat. He won 2 terms and has been particularly popular.
He's rational, which is not what
may not always agree with him, and I'll be honest, sometimes I think he's a bit spineless, but he's rational and he, you know, isn't a complete jackass. And of course, worldwide, he's probably the most popular president we've ever had.
Yeah, there's a video of him doing a speech today, and a Trump supporter decides to start yelling and protesting.
Mm-hmm.
And the crowd starts getting restless, and he's sitting there yelling at the crowd like a teacher trying to wrangle his students.
Yeah.
Sort of, hey, shut up, let me talk here. He's like, I see he's exercising his free of speech, and we all have to respect.
And look at that! Obama's not telling the other people to beat the crap out of him.
No.
He's saying, don't boo, vote.
Yeah.
Yes.
Best thing that he could have said, and he's gone there before.
Yeah.
Yep.
And I'm glad he keeps at it, because that's... Ugh.
All right, so we had that...
many times just throughout numerous rallies throughout this campaign that needed to have been said. And
yeah.
Almost because it wasn't.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, so... Yeah, so by this point, America had gone through some major demographic and cultural changes. Same-sex marriage became the law of the land. We established Obamacare, or the Affordable Care Act, which is extreme problematic in a lot of ways, but is better than what we had beforehand.
Which is nothing.
Which was nothing.
The current form is because of Republicans in Congress.
It's not just because of Republicans. The plan was a Republican creation. It was originally created by the Heritage Foundation as their answer to single payer, was then put into practice in Massachusetts when Mitt Romney was governor. And basically, as a compromise, Obama took it as the model for the Affordable Care Act, and they still oppose them. And then, of course, under the 8 years of Obama's presidency, we have found the rise of the Tea Party and the reactionary wing of the Republican Party coming out in full force. And of course, that wing of the Republican Party basically kicking the, you know, basically just proverbially kicking the cowboy off the horse and then stealing the reins. Yeah. And just riding the horse straight into crazy town. On top of that, we also had another more insidious part of politics that nobody was paying attention to at the time, but they are now. We'll get to that a little bit later. So that's basically the stage. We also of course had the housing crisis, the recession, people losing their jobs, and it becoming more and more clear that our government is not run by the people, but run by corporations, moneyed interests. And they basically have the final say. So with all of that, and then of course there was also the rising of ethnic prejudice against Latino and Muslim individuals. And when I say Muslim individuals, I'm not talking about African-American Muslims or Asian Muslims. You know the type of Muslims I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Because you have to remember, prejudices like this are rarely ever based on actual facts. It's perception.
Yeah.
And so, in 2015, all the nominees started stepping forth. Now, on the Democratic side, it was actually pretty small. You know, we knew Hillary Clinton was going to run pretty much beginning because, well, you know, she was really close in the last primary.
Yeah.
And, of course, Obama won, and eventually Obama made her his Secretary of State. So obviously she was going to win. She go to run. We also got some other more sort of wishy-washy type individuals. I say wishy-washy. They, by all accounts, they weren't bad, but they just didn't have the charisma or anything that could, equal Hillary Clinton. Really. Or money, for that matter. Because let's not kid ourselves. Money. Yeah, let's not kid ourselves here.
Well, that campaign's been a machine.
Yeah. And for a long time, everybody thought it was going to be Hillary. And she was basically unopposed. I mean, there were other people going for the candidacy, but they just could not equal her support, her base.
Yeah.
But then, out of the darkness... came a light.
A crotchety light.
A crotchety old bent over Jew from Vermont with a Brooklyn accent, crazy hair, and a message that basically resonated with the youth of America. Independent Senator Bernie Sanders. The man who was able to show Hillary Clinton her bullshit, and it terrified her.
Mm.
Here came a man who was talking of things like universal single-payer health care, free college, environmentalism, taxing the upper classes while lowering taxes on the lower classes, who called himself the S-word.
Socialist.
The word that had been taboo in America for over 50 years. Unless and he broke it.
Unless you want to throw Obama under the bus.
Yeah. Well, see, Obama never claimed to be a socialist. Yeah. See, so the socialist was a pejorative aimed at him.
Yeah.
But Bernie was different. Bernie was called himself a socialist. He had a background in socialist politics. Yep. He basically broke the sort of barrier that had existed for so long. We had a actual viable presidential candidate for the first time who declared himself a democratic socialist and wore that badge with pride.
Yeah.
And he, forever and after, destroyed the socialism taboo in America. Socialism is something that people actually talk about in the U.S. again without a hushed whisper.
Yeah. Unfortunately, he didn't become the nominated candidate.
No, and that's partly due to, we have to be honest, both the fact that he just didn't win in some areas and also some rather nakedly nefarious backroom dealing in the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
Thanks, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So, ultimately,
who is undoubtedly going to be one of the battlefields that we look to after the election.
Mm-hmm.
And there are several.
Now, to Clinton's credit, at least, she and the rest of the Democratic Party did allow Bernie to get on the committee to make their party platform. And that platform is the most progressive that the Democratic Party has ever had in its history.
Yep.
And yes, universal health care is one of them.
Yeah.
So there's that. But as Bernie himself constantly said, this movement isn't really just about him. Bernie has started something.
Yeah.
And it's not going away.
Nope.
The socialism taboo is broken. People aren't scared of that word anymore.
Yeah.
They may not necessarily talk about it rationally, but it's not this thing that you should not name anymore. It's not the political Voldemort, you know?
Yeah.
I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that now people understand there are different forms of it.
Yeah. Well, also the fact that, you know, we're now so deep in the internet age that people are actually able to regularly talk with non-Americans.
Yep.
Yeah.
With people who live in countries that have all the other major countries in the world that operate under some form of social democracy.
Yeah.
Including, of course, Phil's. That includes, of course, Phil's country, Canada.
Yay.
It also is a part of that that globalism that Trump supporters are so terrified of.
Yeah. Globalism has its flaws. There's no arguing that, but it does have its perks, and this sort of fading of national borders is one of them.
Yeah.
You know, the Americans are no longer limited by our borders, you know, being able to see what the outside world is like. You know, yeah. we no longer have to just say what, you know, conservatives or whatever about the horrors and evils of universal healthcare. We can just ask, you know, a buddy in England, hey, what's healthcare over there in England? He's like, it's all right.
Yeah.
I won't be dying on the streets because I can't get because I can't afford surgery.
Yeah.
There's that. It's like, sounds cool. We should have that over here.
Yeah.
Oh, wait, we can't because we've got the insurance companies.
Yeah.
And it just kind of goes to show how much conservatism almost relied on that lack of sight.
Yeah.
You know, that lack of communication across the world.
Yeah.
To see for ourselves what that sort of system is like, in order to keep their own worldview alive.
Yeah. Now I want to point out, universal health care is definitely better than what we've got now, but it's also not completely perfect. You know, you basically its biggest flaw is that you have to make sure that they all get well-funded. And as Phil, who lives in Canada, knows, that can be a problem sometimes.
Yeah.
Especially when you have a certain political party that likes to play games with funding Medicare as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah, the UK is having their stuff messed with big time.
Yeah, thanks to UKIP. and also, even here's the thing, though. Even the Tories in England still believe that there should be basic universal health care. They may argue of how much it should be funded. But that's weird, isn't it? You know, that even England, their conservatives are to the left of a lot of our Democrats.
Yep.
Yeah.
You know, Stephen freaking Harper, who was basically trying to be Canada's George W., was in many ways to the left of a lot of our Democrats. eventually Hillary did win. And Hillary, as extremely problematic as she is in a lot of ways, we do have to give her a couple of some major points on a couple of different reasons. First things first, yes, she is the first presidential nominee who is a woman.
Yeah.
From a major party, anyway.
From a major party.
Yeah.
Up until now, it had only been vice president candidates, you know.
Yeah.
The Democrats had Geraldine Ferraro. The Republicans had, you know, Caribou Barbie.
But she's also a capable politician, so.
Yeah, she's actually been in politics for well over she's got her political career is well over 30 years old.
Yeah.
You know, remember, she was one of the people who helped prosecute the Watergate case trial. You know, once she if she wins the election, which I still believe that that is the most likely scenario here, she will have basically broken the highest glass ceiling in the world.
Yeah, pretty much.
And what's especially funny is within two administrations, we will have had both our first non-white president and our first woman president.
Yeah.
Which is pretty amazing. And, and here's the other thing about Hillary. Probably her most problematic thing about her is her absolute resolute wanting to install a no-fly zone over Syria.
Yeah.
And that is extremely problematic because, as people have said, to do that, we basically have to go to war with Russia.
Yeah.
But see, here's the big difference between her and Donald Trump. Hillary Clinton is actually malleable.
Yeah.
She actually listens to what people say.
Yeah.
And if people make enough of a stink saying, no, we don't want the no-fly zone over Syria, the chances increase that she'll say, you know what, maybe I won't do that.
Yeah.
Yep.
It's not much, but it's a shot.
Yeah.
Whereas you've got Trump going, where the nuke's at.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we have to go over to the Republicans. Because unlike the unlike the Democratic side, they basically rolled out the clown car this year for the Republicans. Yeah. We thought that the 2012 election was bad. Holy shit. We had Jesus freaks like Rick Santorum. We had assholes like Chris Christie. Who else? We had failed CEOs that couldn't run a goddamn company.
Who are also Jesus freaks.
Yeah. We had a somewhat we had one guy who was basically rational only by virtue of being the one guy, other guy in the race who wasn't completely crazy, and that was John Kasich.
Yeah.
We had
even his record, I mean.
Yeah. We had a hand, and then of course we had a handful of smarmy asshole career politicians who basically had the type that, who were basically amoral to the extreme. Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz.
Yeah.
Well, I say amoral to the extreme. Ted Marco Rubio is basically just a dude who goes where the wind. He has.
He's spineless. He's flopping in the wind.
Yeah. Ted Cruz is basically he's basically been raised to be told by his father that he was anointed by God to be president.
Yeah.
That does stuff to a person's psyche.
Yeah.
And that also, you know, and the dude is just, you know, Marco Rubio is spineless. Ted Cruz is amoral. He's basically Newt Gingrich combined with the most punchable face in America.
That's true.
Yeah.
And then, again, out of the light, a shadow fell upon the land.
An orange shadow.
A bright neon orange Cheeto flavored shadow. A perennial candidate for president, Donald J. Trump, made yet another announcement that he was going to be president.
And somehow, this time it stuck.
Not only did it stick, he annihilated his competition.
Yeah.
It wasn't even goddamn close.
You had to just insult them, and somehow that didn't reflect bad on him.
He insulted them. He insulted various racial groups. He showed his contempt for women. He basically badmouthed veterans and prisoners of war.
Somehow nobody could figure out how to search Google for bad things about Trump.
Yeah.
Not until about the last 6 months.
And it worked. He was one of the most successful candidates the Republican Party had ever run. And by the end of the primaries and by the time of the convention, it was no contest. He annihilated all of them. You know, and by the end,
you've had that rash of anti-intellectualism that's been brewing on the right for years. You had the rise of the Tea Party that is basically so standoffish that the facts have no effect on them.
And then there's one more. Wait a sec. There's one more thing we got to take into account: the rise of the alt-right.
I think that was more part of this whole process coming to fruition, though. I don't think that's a...
Well, you say that, but you have to remember that before Trump, a lot of these guys had always been there, but they had been operating under the surface.
Klansmen.
Yeah. They had been operating outside of polite society.
Yeah.
And then Donald Trump starts spouting the shit he does, and they feel enabled.
Yeah.
And they've come out of the shadows. And
then
apparently everybody else was...
Mussolini is the Republican nominee.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And all of them, and apparently everyone else was too blind to see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what...
We saw it first in Gamergate. That was the warm-up act.
Yep. And then Breitbart tacked their horse to the cart, and
actually got into the campaign.
Got into the campaign. Have basically up until fairly recently refused to denounce various hate groups, including one of the most infamous white supremacists in America, David Duke.
Yeah.
Wants to run for office.
Yep.
Oh, he's been a lifelong politician.
Now we have things, new words and phrases that these alt-right dipshits have forced into the lexicon, including cuck, beta,
false flags.
Lugenprasa. Do you know what Lugenprasa is? That's what the Nazis called lying press. Yeah.
Joy.
Lamestream media.
That actually prefigures the Tea Party by quite a while. That was during W's era.
Yeah, but now it's like you click on any Trump-related hashtag on Twitter, that's response to any rational person in the media.
Now we've got people talking about shit like IQ and biodiversity. Basically praising ethnic nationalism. Yeah. Look, they may be, it's true, it may be true that to a small extent, perhaps the alt-right is a little overly exaggerated in the media. But at the same time, we can see their influence in the Trump campaign.
It's true.
So, eventually, the primaries were over, Trump won, Hillary won, and then the actual presidential race went in gusto, and
you had some debates that didn't really amount to much.
Yeah.
Except for that last one where, you know, Trump really kind of showed what he was.
Mm-hmm.
It was great SNL fodder.
Yeah, it was great SNL fodder, and
it's like how The Onion has struggled to make fun of this campaign.
Yeah.
Because the truth is,
SNL is the same thing, where it's like, this is kind of just normal coverage.
Yeah. And now it's just, it was searing pain for the last couple months.
So,
just tensions increasingly rising. Political violence becoming a reality. And
on a really stupid scale, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The media basically helping to cultivate it by giving Trump so much attention in the first place. You know, Fox News basically basically losing control of the monster they themselves created.
And not being at all happy about it, either.
And now
it's been mildly amusing to watch, actually.
And there are two things that really piss me off about all of this. One, of course, is the fact that, Donald Trump has actually legitimized political violence in the eyes of a lot of people. And that is a scary thing.
It's stochastic terrorism.
Mm-hmm.
We've talked about it on the show before.
And the other side,
he gets taken to account for it.
Yeah. But the other thing that really pisses me off just as much are all of the wishy-washy liberals who will not stand up to him the way that it needs to be stood up.
Absolutely.
There's a lot that can...
Even the people in his own party.
There's a lot to be said about trying not to, quote-unquote, lower yourself to their level. But there's a point when shit like, you know, respectable politics just doesn't work anymore. Look, history has shown us what happens when you let this shit go unopposed. This is how fascism starts. You know, you can't just, and the thing is, we keep wanting to treat it like it's any other type of political movement in America. That's not how fascism works. Because fascism isn't looking for popular appeal. It may try to use popular appeal to legitimize itself, but fascism by its very nature is elitist. It doesn't care about the popular will. It only wants that amount of influence it can get so that once it has the chance, it can take over. It happened in Italy. It happened in Germany. It happened in Eastern Europe. It happened in Japan. one by one, almost the exact same way.
Yeah. In 4 days, if people don't vote their hearts, it could happen there.
We've kept telling ourselves that because we're Americans, we're somehow unique. That fascism is something that can't happen here, but it can.
Yep.
And we can't just use words. We have to actively confront them.
Yeah.
Tomorrow, in Pennsylvania, at the state capitol, white nationalists are going to be holding a unity rally. All various types, from the National Socialist Movement, American Third Position, various neo-Nazi white nationalists and white supremacist groups are all coming together. If there's any lessons I can tell you here, remember a couple episodes ago when I talked about the Battle of Cable Street?
Yeah.
That is how you react to fascism. Mm-hmm. Using words and trying to play the respectable politician does not work in the face of fascism. Mm. Fascism is something you have to confront head on. Because if you let them go unhindered, well, millions of dead innocents bear witness to what happens when you let that happen. I'm not trying to scare anyone, but I'm trying to make people understand the gravity of this situation.
Yeah.
It's hard to convey with words.
Yeah.
You know, ask all of those, you know, there are some people who have worked for civil rights politics, some people who are Japanese Americans who spent their childhoods during World War II in those internment camps in the Southwest.
George Takei.
They know where this shit goes.
Yeah.
Okay? When Donald Trump started talking about, you know, banning Muslims from immigrating into the country and even entertaining the idea of some sort of identification system to see if a person was Muslim, that should have been the thing that immediately set off red flags. Mm-hmm. I mean, the shit about saying that Mexicans are rapists and drug dealers, that was bad enough. That alone should have been enough to disqualify him. But once he started going faux Hitler, that should have been the end of it. But no, because the Republican Party was so fucking cynical about its base that they thought they could control him, that they could channel him and use it to keep their party in power. Look at where it took them. By all accounts, the Republican Party as we know it is dead. It's dead.
Yeah.
It may go on as a husk of its former self from here on out, but that old Republican Party is no more. That power base that they tried to create, that they created, it's left them.
Yeah.
And it's gone to something else far more sinister than they ever were.
I think it's going to be the start of some kind of UKIP movement, really.
So, that's basically where we're at now. So, to something that's a bit more positive. The Paris Agreement. Everybody knows what the Paris Agreement is, right? It's the starting to lower greenhouse emissions.
Right.
It goes into effect today.
Yeah, 170 countries, one of the biggest agreements between pretty much every civilized country in the world has ever been put into place.
Yep.
Yeah. This is kind of an acknowledgement that, hey, you know, we're stuck on this planet. We really need to start taking care of it.
Yeah. Now, for the record, us four here, we're probably going to be dead by the time, you know, the really serious effects of climate change start to affect us.
Yeah.
But you people shouldn't wait that long.
No, not a good idea.
Because the thing is, here's the thing. We do have the technology for affordable, you know, energy that isn't as environmentally destructive.
Yeah.
You know? We only need, in hindsight, we only need to make a few mild changes. Hmm. You know, at this point, we know that the climate change is going to happen.
Yeah.
There is, at this point, yeah, it's already started. Now, there are things that we can do to, there are steps that we as a species can take to start, you know, reducing the effects of it. You know, we can, you know, there's, you know, trees we can plant, we can cultivate various, you know, trees, because trees, of course, you plant those, they suck, you know, carbon dioxide and stuff out of the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, cultivate various algae cultures that help both purify the ocean and also, again, help to draw, you know, the emissions out of the atmosphere. Stuff we can do.
Yeah.
You know. And I think one of the worst parts is all these people, there's this sort of fatalism that sort of set in, where we all think that we're basically helpless to forces that we could never understand.
Hmm.
But climate change is a fixable problem. We can fix it. You know, this is like, you know, it's like, you know, gun violence and all this other stuff. We have the, it is within our power to do something about it.
Yeah.
We aren't helpless.
Just have to have the will to do it.
You have to have the will to do it. So, you know, start willing.
Yeah.
The species depends on it.
Yeah.
So, okay, now, finally, to less serious and far more entertaining stuff. First and foremost, Metallica. They're back. Yes.
New single.
New single from an upcoming new album.
Yeah.
And so far, it's all awesome.
Yeah, if they
I like
every three tracks
I've heard out of it, but
but this
last single, Atlas Rise, definitely the best of the three.
Yeah, it looks like Metallica's kind of learned their lesson.
Yeah, well, I mean, they've had two lackluster studio albums.
Yeah, two lackluster studio albums, one really disastrous side project. And, you know, they kind of became a joke.
Yeah. And then they started dropping these singles, and of course, like, half the fan base loves what they hear, and the other half is like, oh, he's sold out.
Well, that other half falls under that rule that I've talked about numerous times, mostly on the Day Zero update, that people who are impossible to please categorically are not worth trying to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
like, I mean, there's been dudes who've been saying Metallica sold out since Ride the Lightning came out.
Yeah.
You know, once they heard an acoustic guitar intro.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't be surprised if there were fans who complained that Metallica had sold out when Kill Them All came out, because it wasn't a bootleg that was produced to sound like utter shit.
Yeah.
Yeah, when they say sold out, they mean they're trying to make money.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want to do this. They want to keep doing this, so they want to make a living wage.
Yeah.
At this point, I think that Metallica is at a cultural and financial point where they could basically do whatever they wanted. And that, from what we're hearing from what's coming out of this, that kind of sounds like what they're doing now.
Yeah, well, that's basically what they wanted to do, was make a thrash album.
Yeah.
So they're doing that.
And they're sort of reaching back into their roots. You know, the new wave of British heavy metal influence is really strong, especially on the most recent. It sounds like an Iron Maiden tune.
Yeah.
Just a little heavier. I guess they just had an epiphany or something, and this is the Metallica we remember.
Yeah. I've got my copy pre-ordered, so, you know, the 18th or whenever the heck it decides to show up at my doorstep, I'll have my CDs.
Yes.
Yes, I buy CDs, because...
Yeah.
Physical. I buy CDs, too.
Yeah. Physical media.
I used to, and then they get all scratched up, and they become useless.
Whose fault is that?
Yeah, yours.
Yeah, I listen to too much.
Yeah, you see, what you gotta do is you take your CD and then you rip it to flak and then you listen to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was listening in the car.
You can put MP3s in there.
Yeah.
Anyways.
So, yeah, that's great. Finally, you know, Trujillo will finally be able to be on a good Metallica album.
Yeah.
Because basically he's been on shit.
I still enjoyed Death Magnetic.
Yeah. Well, that a lot of Death Magnetic kind of felt a little recycled to me. So this is... There's definitely some originality here, so I'm very pleased by what I'm seeing and hearing.
Okay. So now, it's time to more or less wrap up this episode, where we are once again visiting Superplay.
Yes.
And this time, we're going to issue 17th of March 1994, the Mega Man X issue.
Another one that I actually had my hands on.
All right, so get ready to experience yet more 90s idiosyncratic approaches to both to the medium.
Yeah.
All right, so everybody on it?
I got it.
Yep.
All right. So we got the cover here. Let's see, what do we got on the cover? Well, we got that amazing drawing by Mr. Overton of Mega Man X. Let's see, what do we got?
He's been consistently good for Superplay throughout their run.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see, what do we got here? Reviewed, we've got Lethal Enforcers, Mystical Ninja 2, Dragon Ball Z 2, King of the Monsters 2, Space Ace, NBA Jam, and many, many more. Let's dive in, shall we?
Yep.
All right, so, we got the action replay. I think we talked about that before, didn't we? It was the...
Yeah, it was a game, kind of like a Game Genie. Yeah, basically that.
Yeah, it was...
I have one for my Sega Saturn.
Yep. Yeah, man.
Because it's also a converter.
Yeah.
Back when cheat codes were relevant.
Yeah.
It's true.
You actually had cheat codes.
Instead of having to buy them for $10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, back in the day when, you know, the codes and stuff you had to enter using the Game Genie could sometimes be about 6 or 7 lines long.
Yeah.
Especially if it was a big RPG like, say, Final Fantasy VII.
Yeah.
Those could be like 10 lines long.
Yeah.
And you had to make sure they were absolutely correct.
Yeah, or they either wouldn't work or they would do things you didn't quite expect.
No.
Like make you die immediately.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right, so we got the editorial. Let's see. And we got the table of contents. Let's see. What do we got here? We got Solstice 2, Equinox. Oh, Shadowrun for the Super Nintendo.
Good times.
Yeah, good times.
I think that was actually the good version of Shadowrun.
Yeah. Total Carnage. Mystical Ninja 2, Lethal Enforcers. First look at the Consumer Electronics Show. yes.
Back when they had... I think they were the main show at that time.
Mm-hmm.
For video games.
Yep. Yeah.
E3 was still a year away.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Let's see, we got Music of Life, Mega Man X, Mortal Kombat 2, when it was making its way over to the UK. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's something else I forgot. This issue was published during that era in video games.
Yeah,
we'll probably talk about that a little bit more in a minute, but first, let's flip the page here. There it is, Mortal Kombat 2 approaches. Mm. God damn, I remember going to the arcades and this was just the shit. I mean, there was no contest.
Yeah.
I mean, there really... Back in the day, there was no other, you know... crowd gatherer in the arcade than Mortal Kombat was.
Yeah.
I mean, people would fucking...
Mortal Kombat...
I don't know, in my area, it kind of depended which arcade you went to.
Yeah. Well, you got to remember,
you
I
had
lived...
your Street Fighter arcades, you had your Mortal Kombat arcades, and really the two communities were kind of segregated from each other.
Yeah. Then you end. Then you live in the ass end of the South like me, and well, that's you had the Mortal Kombat series, and pretty much every big arcade that you went to had this game in it, and it attracted so many people. People would freaking stack themselves on top of each other to watch other people.
Sorry, if there were some arcades like the Mortal Kombat one that I'm speaking of in my area, actually took a second monitor and just set it on top of the cabinet so that the crowds could see what was going on without, you know, actually interfering with the players. Or standing on their feet or whatever. Only saw that on a couple of machines, but I thought it was one of the greatest things ever conceived.
And then, you know, you have to remember the arcades that I had when I was at, where I was at, there were two basically main arcades. There was Macon Bowling, which was the bowling alley. And then, of course, there was Aladdin's Castle, which was at the Macon Mall. And both of them were roughly about the same size as far as room area goes. And, yeah, I mean, it would get packed in there. And also because Mortal Kombat 2 was like the first game I remember seeing. Well, no, I scratch that. It was the original Mortal Kombat. The original Mortal Kombat was the first time I ever saw blood in a video game. And it fucking floored me. Because see, here's
blood
the thing.
Blood at all or just blood like that?
Blood, period. Remember, ass in the South. Got to keep that in mind. You know, because here's the thing. You know, back in the day, of course, you had the two big fighting games. One was Street Fighter. The other was Mortal Kombat. Mortal Kombat, you played... there was a reason you played Mortal Kombat. The reason was because you were talking to that one kid on the playground, and he was talking about how if you put in a certain combination of moves when you were playing the blue ninja would rip off the dude's head, and you were like, nuh-uh, they wouldn't let you do that in a video game. And then you went and you did it, and it was glorious. I went into that arcade a boy, and I walked out of it a man.
Yeah, this is real. Those are real people killing each other.
And those digitized graphics, they have not aged well, but back in the day...
Yeah, back in the day, CRT monitors hid a lot of that, a lot of the blemishes.
Yeah.
And now it's a cartoon.
It was a really effective technique.
Yeah, it was. But yeah, so let's see. Yeah, it's basically gonna hit, it looks like it was just about to hit the UK... talking about how, you know...
It was already in the arcades at that point. It hit consoles in most markets, I think, around the same time, which was that fall.
Yeah.
So...
Let's see. Responding to recent concerns over graphic violence, Midway have fitted the coin-op with a special switch that disables the blood and gore effects. It's doubtful, however, that the average arcade proprietor will want to make use of such a profit-reducing feature.
True.
And nobody did.
All right. Moving on. Oh, here it is. Space Ace.
Yeah, Space Ace for the SNES. It
was a disaster.
No resemblance to the Space Ace arcade game, and nobody cared.
And it was hard as shit. It had no way of being able to simulate what you could get at the arcade because that was fucking full motion video, and
it was about 25 years too early for the SNES to do that.
Over 50
it can now.
It would have had to have been miserable to be on the team that was even asked to attempt that.
And the hit detection was fucking all over the place. I mean, even the very first screen, you know, you basically had to play 5 or 6 times before you could get the hang of it.
Yeah.
You know, I can't tell you how many times I tried to play that game and just kept dying, not being able to get past that first part.
Yeah.
That's just fucking infuriating. Let's see. Yeah. Well, here we got some fanzines. Yeah, remember those?
Yeah.
This is what we did before the internet.
Yep.
Yeah. Made fanzines and printed them out and distributed them.
Went to Kinko's. You know, photocopied them.
Yeah.
Yeah, gamer fan fiction.
Yeah. Let's see, what else have we got? Super Bomberman 2.
Yes.
From Hudson Soft.
Back when Hudson Soft was, you know, not part of Konami.
No. Yes, this was a particularly good part of the Bomberman series.
Yes. Multi-tap gaming at its best.
Mm.
I would still say that this and Saturn Bomberman were probably the peak of the series.
Yeah. Although I did enjoy Bomberman 64 to an extent. Yeah, I get that. Let's see, and under here. Oh, here's another idiosyncratic part of fandom in the 90s. Calling anime manga.
Yeah.
So... Yeah.
Didn't know any better back then.
We didn't know. We didn't know that there was a difference between the two.
Yeah.
Well, you actually had a company called Manga Entertainment that was confusing everybody about that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, at least they pronounced it correctly there instead of most people over here saying manga.
Manga, yeah. as Angry Joe would do.
Yeah.
So what do we got here? We got Doomed Megalopolis. Yeah, I remember that one.
I've never heard of that one.
And the other one, of course, is Crying Freeman.
Yeah,
which was basically a soft porn action anime. Brought to you by the same guy who created Lone Wolf and Cub. Weirdly enough.
Yeah.
You can actually get that manga in English now. Dark Horse sells it.
Yeah.
Oh, it is filthy. And also mildly racist as well. Because, you know, Japan.
Yeah.
And early 90s.
Yeah.
And early 90s.
Oh, no, the original Crying Freeman came out in the 60s.
Oh.
The manga did, 60s and 70s.
All the more reason.
Yeah. Plus, this was, like, male-oriented manga, so you're talking about basically frustrated sort of early 30s salarymen.
Yeah.
Where they didn't really know all that much outside of their borders of what, you know, other countries were like, which usually ended up some rather unfortunate racial caricatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We got over here, American Softworks Springs into Action. I remember them because they made the Super Troll Island.
Which is on the list.
It is. Well, if you want to know more about Super Troll Island, consult your local Game Grumps. They did an episode about it, and poor Aaron Hansen damn near just had an aneurysm.
Yeah.
It was frightening. It's the stuff nightmares are made of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, and Skulljagger's Revenge.
God.
Have everyone here, have we all played the original Skulljagger?
Yeah, it was bad.
Mm.
It was really bad.
It also made no goddamn sense.
Well, that was most games. Licensed games.
An enjoyable experience.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see what else we got. Oh, here, live from Hell City. We got more Japan stuff. So let's see. We got we got a lot of Mario stuff here. Let's see. Man, I love this old vintage Mario stuff.
Yeah.
It's just fun.
These kind of remind me of the Happy Meal toys for the that were promoting Super Mario Brothers 3.
Yeah.
Oh, and look, it's a Sailor Moon game? Machine?
Something resembling a game.
Sort of looks like that, the noise toy that you had where you spun it, the wheel went around. It's like, and the cow goes, moo.
I guess maybe it's a love tester or something.
Yeah, which high school girl is best for you?
Let's see. And I think that's, let's see. And I'm trying to, what that blue thing is in the corner.
I like the Yoshi plushie that looks real crappy down the middle.
Yeah. Looks like something you get at a state fair.
Yeah.
After you knocked all the bottles over.
Here's your bootleg Yoshi plush.
Yeah. I guess that thing in the corner is a Moomin Troll. I'm not sure.
I think it's supposed to be slippers.
Probably.
It says Moomin slippers.
I got it. Moomin. It is Moomin. Awesome. All right. Let's see. Moving on. Oh, we got Fantasy Quest.
Yep.
It's the best part of the magazine. Oh, this is Final Fantasy VI we're talking about. Yes, oh, well, actually, first it's talking about, what is it, Romancing Saga?
Yep. Two.
Romancing Saga 2.
Which is the one you can now get on Android.
Yep.
In English.
Yeah. In English. So, as far as the Saga games go, how good was this one?
I think the Romancing Saga trilogy was all fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Like,
is it one of those games where, to try and tell you the plot, it would fill out a phone book?
I wasn't that weird.
I don't think so. It was very non-linear in its execution. Like, uncharacteristically so, which is probably one of the reasons that they weren't candidates for immediate localization during that era.
Oh, God. There's the workload.
Yeah, they... the Saga games as a franchise are all pretty much regarded as the epitome of art house JRPGs.
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, that would play a lot better than it did back then.
Right.
Which is why we've been seeing the Saga games becoming more prevalent over here. Really going back to, I think, 1997 with Saga Frontier.
Yeah.
And then I can't say we haven't missed a beat with that series since, but ever since then, Square Enix has been very, I'd say very good about bringing them over.
Mm.
And then getting this one in particular, Romancing Saga 2, localized and released on smartphones is a really good step. The original was remade on the PS2 and localized. We still need Romancing Saga 3, which, of course, is the best of the bunch.
Nice. Yeah. And, of course, on the opposite page, we have the legend, Final Fantasy VI.
Or 3, as it was known to us back then.
Because, of course, it was. But there it is.
Yeah.
Gaze upon it in awe.
Yeah.
The game that stole many, many, many nights of my youth.
And hearts.
Yeah.
You will learn to weep like a little girl from chiptune music. Oh, and then there's also talking about the Final Fantasy OVAs over here in the
side. Final Fantasy V.
Yeah. That we didn't get.
Yeah, let's... move on.
Yeah, just a precursor to what would happen.
Still better than
six or seven years later.
Mm. Let's see, what do we got? We got Soccer Kid.
Yeah. I don't think we saw this game over here.
Yeah, this one looks kind of UK centric.
I don't know. Ocean.
It's Ocean.
Yeah, they were a UK company, so.
Let's see. And moving on, we got the...
Yeah, released over here.
Oh,
okay.
It's 94.
Well, it sure as hell made one hell of an impression, didn't it?
It apparently says it released on the Atari Jaguar in 2000.
Mm.
GBA 2002. Weird.
Why would you release it on the Jaguar in 2000, 5 years after that system died? I don't get it.
Let's see. Said Blabbermouth, Chris and Tell. Wolfenstein 3D for the Super NES, which, by the way, we're going to get to in a little bit. Yeah.
It's Wolfenstein.
Yeah. That is an awfully androgynous-looking soldier.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like generic clip art soldier.
No eyes.
Here we go, anime world. All about Rumiko Takahashi.
Yes.
The most popular and most successful female comics artist in the world.
And this was actually just a small handful of influences that that kind of nudged me toward watching Ranma One Half for the first time.
Yeah. Which, by the way, this was published during the Ranma One Half era. It was still being serialized and shown in Sunday over in Japan. And the anime was in full swing. And it's written by Helen McCarthy, too. Yep. Yeah, she,
was that's from the last issue.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The thing is, she's actually kind of a big deal, because she's pretty, kind of a big deal in, the anime world. She's done a lot of help getting stuff localized over here. Let's see. We got a Yurusei Yatsura. Everybody, that was her first major hit there. And that thing fucking took off like crazy.
Yeah.
We've also got the other manga that she was working on concurrently in a monthly magazine and weekly in Big Comic Spirits, which is Maisenikoku.
Yep. Good stuff.
And it's an amazing story too.
Yeah.
It's got none of like the magical elements that, you know, her other stuff is. It's just a straight sort of slice of life love story.
Yeah.
You know, about people basically living in a housing complex. And it's one of the greatest fucking stories in manga you will ever read.
Yeah.
Let's see. So yeah, we got Yurusei.
Has been a candidate for a remake.
Give it time.
Especially with the anime landscape being what it is now.
Yeah.
That would be a perfect series to bring back.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And of course we got Ranma One Half over there in the corner. That is basically the manga that finally sealed her reputation. And it's really, like, really difficult to emphasize just how much of an institution Ranma One Half was back in the day.
Shame what happened with the ending, but...
Basically this was the only other anime that could rival, you know, Sailor Moon and Dragon Ball. At the time,
it eclipsed them.
Yeah,
you know, for it was an industry in and of itself.
Yep.
We're not just talking the manga. We're also not just talking the famous anime. We're talking video games and books and CDs and all types of shit. All right. So. All right, what do we got next? We got Samurai Spirits, which we know over here is Samurai Showdown.
Yeah, the SNES version, which was a better port than it had any right to be.
Yeah. I remember this being kind of controversial.
Early Shinkiro art, too.
I remember this being kind of a controversial thing, too, because this was a pretty... For a Japanese arcade fighter, it was pretty bloody.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could cut people in half.
Yeah. Or just poke them and watch them bleed out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And just a fountain, just a geyser.
Unless you were playing it in North American arcades, in which case you couldn't.
It depended on the settings, I think.
It depended on places, too. I saw one in a Walmart that still had the blood going, so...
Yeah.
I remember there was one in the Aladdin's Castle, which was actually the Mortal Kombat arcade that I was speaking of earlier, that had the blood turned on.
Mm. Yeah.
So,
see what else. We got news on Nintendo's next machines that, of course, ended up being Nintendo 64, as we all know. And then we got this thing here at the bottom, it was an electronic games timer.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Cause the, parents had to basically control how long their kids would play,
you know, because, you know, in other words, they had to act like parents.
Yeah. You know, so use technology to do that instead of actually doing your job, you know.
That's good. Well, that's minimizing all interaction.
Yep.
Okay, what do we got over here?
There's also a weird ear trimmer, too. I don't know why they're covering that. Whatever that's
about. Let's see.
Your ears are filthy. Clean them out.
All right. And then over here, we got the chart. The charting what was really popular at the time. Obviously, in the biggest one at the time was Mario All-Stars.
Yeah.
I mean, why not? That game
was all over the charts in the last issue we read, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See, we also got Aladdin, Jurassic Park, Street Fighter II Turbo, which apparently still had a long life.
Yeah.
Yeah, it seems like many of these games are very familiar because they were on that list in the other issue, and that was a few issues back.
Yeah, we got Super Mario Kart. Nigel Mansell's World Championship, Super Bomberman, Flashback, Mortal Kombat, and Cool Spot.
What would publishers today give to have games just have the long legs that games in the 90s did on the sales charts?
Yeah.
At least about half of the games they do.
Let's see, and they got what's, you know, selling over there. Apparently at the time, and here in the States, Tecmo Super Bowl was the top seller. Also Madden 94, Mortal Kombat, Super Empire Strikes Back, NHL Hockey 94, NBA Showdown, a lot of sports games.
This was NHL 94.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Aladdin, Street Fighter II Turbo, Super Bomberman, and Secret of Mana.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't just an NHL release. Like, it wasn't just the annual. This was NHL 94 when it was new.
Mm.
Yeah.
And that's something that can't really be understated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And as for the Japanese, well, Romancing Saga is at the top.
Dragon Quest 1 and 2 collection.
Well, of course, that was going to be. And Dragon Ball Z 2.
Justifiably.
Fatal Fury 2, Gaia Gunsoku, Tecmo Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Weird.
That must have been the dudes working at the military bases. Fumeko's Great Adventure, East 4, Mark of the Sun, Aretha, and Pretty Soldier Sailor Moon R. Yeah. No, R.
Pretty
Soldier. Oh, okay.
I think that was one of the beat-em-ups.
Sort of. Yeah, it was.
Ben Presto, yeah, probably.
Let's see, and well, the UK, we can kind of go in, because all the UK stuff we're going to see, but yeah, kind of interesting just to see what was selling then.
Oh, wow, that Nintendo Stanley Cup game.
Mm-hmm.
With the Mode 7.
That was an unfortunate.
I think people actually projectile vomited trying to play that game.
Yeah.
That and NCAA basketball.
Yeah.
I made L10. Let's play it.
Yeah. Yeah. And here it is, Las Vegas Consumer Electronics Show.
What year was this?
1994.
Was this the year that Nintendo kind of screwed over Sony? No, I think that was the year before.
Hmm.
Yeah, that was
okay there, Chris.
No, I think Chris was falling asleep.
All right, go ahead and just scoop him out.
Yeah, just kind of hang up. So yeah, let's move on to the what we got in the CES.
All right. So let's see, Nintendo of America, what have they got here? Oh, Ken Griffey Jr., Major League Baseball, Stunt Race FX. This was back when, you know, all of their polygonal games were given the FX logo.
Yeah.
Oh, and Super Metroid.
Yeah, one of the greatest games of all time.
Yep, and they gave it shitty little screenshots right down there in the corner.
Little tiny screenshots.
Itty bitty little screenshots. We've also got, let's see, Sound Fantasy. It's a music-making game. Kirby's T-Shot. And that was about it.
Dream Course, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dream Course.
And that was it for Nintendo.
Yeah.
Let's see. And then, of course, we got Capcom.
Mega they Man gave Soccer.
Us, huh?
No, Mega yeah, Man Soccer's on.
Yeah, they also gave us Eye of the Beholder, Wizardry.
I like that game.
Wizardry 5, and yeah, Mega Man Soccer. Okay. Those are the screenshots. Yeah. Slam Masters. Yeah, remember Slam Masters?
Huh?
Yeah.
That was the kind of sort of wrestling game from Capcom.
Yeah.
You had to get four people together to fully appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, sort of one of their first instances of a character crossover.
Yep.
Because Mike Haggard from Final Fight was one of the wrestlers. Yeah. And his oh-so-famous daughter in the red dress makes a cameo.
Naturally.
Yeah. And also, I'm not quite sure. I think I might be. You guys have all played Slam Masters, right? Okay, yeah. So have you guys like actually completed the single player?
And it was not really much of a single player there. It's just basically a series of games.
Yeah. So like, you go up against the last boss. Do you guys remember what happened in every ending of the characters? You'd get like a sudden influx, like a couple of other characters would invade, and they basically were like XPs of like the Fatal Fury characters.
I don't remember that.
Yeah, I remember. Pepperidge Farm remembers. Let's see. Slam Masters, Soccer Shootout, and Knights of the Realm and King of Dragons.
Knights of the Realm, I'm thinking, is Knights of the Round.
Yeah, Knights of the Round, which is a very good game. King of Dragons was also not that bad.
Yeah. Let's see, we got EA down here in the corner. We got Bill Walsh College Football. MLB PA Baseball.
Yeah, that was before they had both licenses.
Yeah. And FIFA International Soccer.
Yeah. Would have been the first FIFA that they released on the SNES. Yeah.
What's the one in the center? That screenshot in the center. I don't recognize that. See Bill Walsh. Oh, it doesn't say down here either. Yeah.
Mm.
Whatever. Let's see. And then, oh, I think this is Rise of the Robot. They got they got Mega Man merchandise.
Yep.
Figures.
Yay. If you have some of those now, you're probably sitting on a gold mine.
Yeah.
Forever to get over here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Now what do we get? Oh, yeah. This is something I was looking at the other day. So apparently back in England around the early 90s, this dude named Simon Harris, who was like a electronic music guy, made a song called Super Mario Land that apparently reached the top 10 in the UK. And looked like here he was pairing up with none other than Mr. Miyamoto himself to make the follow-up.
All guys.
Look at that young Miyamoto.
Looking all Mike Myers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is also, and them pairing up, which means, you know, he's, Nintendo is not suing him over the IP.
Right.
Different
times. Oh, and it looks like he was also thinking about making a Street Fighter album as well.
Yeah.
So basically, it's an interview with him. Nothing really. You know, go read that at your leisure, because we aren't.
Yeah.
Keep going.
Yeah. See what else we got. We got Young Merlin, an ad for Young Merlin. Do not remember that. And next page, there it is. There it is. Mega Man X. Behold its glory.
This is the Japanese game translation.
Yeah.
Yeah. Icy Pinguigo. Burning Nomander. Storm Eagleed. Spark Mandriller.
Mandriller.
Boomer Kuwanger. Sting Camellial. Armor Armarge. And Launcher Octopold.
Yeah, I think didn't quite translate those right.
No,
close. All but one of them got changed in the English language release.
Please tell me it was the Spark Mandriller.
The one that didn't get changed was Boomer Kuwanger.
Ah.
Spark Mandriller just became Spark Mandrill.
Yeah. So Mega Man X, basically, if I remember correctly, it was Mega Man X was supposed to be like in the far future of the Mega Man universe.
100 years, give or
take. And it from what I remember, the Mega Man X games had a much deeper plot.
Yes.
And they reveled in it.
Yeah, they really did.
Also, somebody who somebody in on the Mega Man X development team was a Guns N' Roses fan.
Well, on the localization team, anyway.
Because
when they changed all of the Robot Master names for Mega Man X 5, you had a bunch of GNR references.
You had Axel, you had Slash, you had Adler. Can't remember, there was a couple others.
Oh man. Also, this was also the first Mega Man game where Mega Man could do a Hadouken.
Yep.
Now, granted, you basically had to
collect anything you put in front of him with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, granted, to get it, you basically had to collect every single collectible that was in the game.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I do mean every single one of them.
Yeah. You had to keep a checklist, because you missed one, you couldn't go back.
But if you did it,
the password.
Well, you could do that, but
no, you couldn't.
No, you couldn't.
There was no password that gave you access to Hadouken.
Nope.
Yeah.
But it was a badge of pride. It meant you. And I mean, they rewarded you with one hell of a weapon.
Yeah.
One shot, one kill. Anything that was in front of you. Did not matter what.
Yeah.
See, and we got some more. And rating. Let's see. Overall score, 88%.
That's fair.
Says, verdict, it's really just a 16-bit upgrade of the old NES games, though that's hardly a criticism. Smart graphics, neat ideas, but it just falls short of being a classic.
Wait until X3.
Yeah. Let's see. What else? We got a flashback for NES. I'm pretty sure that was one of those. It was one of those cinematic platformer.
Yeah.
Type games. Let's see. Lethal Enforcers. Oh boy. This. As we've said in the past, back when video game violence was at the pinnacle of the national debate, well, international debate, there were basically four games that constantly kept coming up, and Lethal Enforcers was one of them.
Yeah. It was Lethal Enforcers, it was Night Trap, Mortal Kombat, and Doom. Mm.
Well, no. No, it was actually Time Killers, Mortal Kombat, Lethal Enforcers, and Night Trap.
Doom was in there too.
Yeah, but see, Doom was primarily a PC thing, and PC was still pretty niche at the time.
Not niche enough to not be on the news.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so it says here, in a time where people are beginning to question the amount of violence in video games, surely this is a bit over the top. Not the SNES version, that's for sure.
Yeah. Nintendo was going through a phase.
Yeah, this was back when basically Nintendo would just automatically censor any game that you would put on their system. Yeah. Well, Nintendo of America, at least.
Yeah.
Nope. No. Of course, by the time Mortal Kombat
Nintendo
2...
Japan were no saints either.
No.
No.
But by the time Mortal Kombat 2, they had more or less stopped that practice.
They like money.
Yeah, they like money more than anything else. Oh, by the way, overall score, 69%.
That also fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, verdict. The action may be a bit dull in one-player mode, but the two-player mode is a real hoot. And that'll cost you a hefty 93 pounds. Irk. 93, of course, buying a second light gun.
Second gun.
Possibly a second copy of the game, because I'm not sure if it was packaged on its own when it first came out.
Yeah. Hmm. Dragon Ball Z 2.
Yes.
Overall score, 75%.
I never played this one.
Verdict. If you like manga action, then this delivers the goods in a big way. As a beat-em-up, it's fun for a while, but no great shakes. Once again, using the word manga to mean anime.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Damn it, Japan. So, yeah, this was one of the slew of Dragon Ball-related 2D fighters, and there was a million of them.
Yeah, they came out on pretty much everything.
Yeah. Pretty sure there's a toaster oven somewhere that they made a game for. But, yeah, obviously, since this one was actually brought over to the West, this one is particularly special. Then again,
wait,
y'all
said...
Huh?
This one was brought over?
No, it's a Japan release. Sorry. Sorry. Sorry, everybody.
Wait,
sorry.
Is it...
I was like, dude, shit. Oh, look what it says here down the corner. No, it's not the dish of the day down the local Chinese, but an anime-inspired beat-em-up. Wow.
Okay, that's somewhat racist. So.
I will forgive them for that, considering it was the early 90s. all right, moving on. Legend of the Mystical Ninja 2.
Another great game we got fucked out of.
Yep.
Yeah. That happened a lot over here.
Man, these... I gotta, you know, it's been a long time since I played one of the Mystical Ninja games. And it's amazing to go back and just remember just how goddamn bizarre they were.
It's true.
Really, it's one of those games where they just, you take a big old bag of Japanese folklore.
Yeah.
Mix in some modern B-movie stuff, some weird comedy, mix it up in a bowl, throw it against a wall, and see what sticks.
Yeah,
and it worked really well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I still...
I remember it turned into Gradius for some reason at one point, and I'm not entirely sure how.
There was a game center where you could go to where you played Gradius.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, of course, I think this was the first game where they introduced the giant robot.
Yeah.
Which would eventually make an appearance in, I think it was Mystical Ninja 64. And in that one, it was actually first person, and you were inside the robot piloting it. God, that game was so much fun. God, I had so much enjoyment out of that one game. Let me tell you. And it was just, there was so much stuff you could find in it. And I don't know why, but for some reason, and I'll admit for a lot of older games, those old polygonal graphics are sort of hard for me to deal with. But not in Ninja 64. It's just so charming to me for some reason.
Yeah. Well, they weren't trying to be very detailed with the polygons. They kind of designed the art around it that it worked really well.
Also showed me that sushi could be delicious. You got to remember, there was a long time here in the U.S. when people talked about sushi. It was like, have you ever heard of sushi? It's so gross. And then people actually tried it and were like, wow, this is awesome.
Yeah.
All right. Oh, boy. Next up. Yeah, it's one of those educational Mario games.
Yeah. Moving on.
Yep. Oh, by the way, we got to look at the overall score. 60%. That is 60% more than I would have given it.
We missed the score on Mystical Ninja 2 as well.
Yeah, it was a 90.
90.
Yeah. Space Ace.
Yeah, well, let me look at it. It was a 60, yeah. Oh, God. Like I said, this game was fucking impossible. And overall score, they gave it a 58%.
Yeah.
Verdict, as a dog's dinner goes, this is a Christmas lunch at Battersea. It perfectly combines all the things I hate in video games.
Yeah. This was not a good game.
Yeah. Even though that was a little British-centric, it still managed to get...
The point.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. NBA Jam. Man, that was the other thing in arcades that was the shit back then.
Yes.
Yeah. This is the game that made me like basketball. Because it basically did not try to be an accurate basketball simulator. It just said, fuck it. Put some fire on the ball and just run with it.
No, you just get one of your friends, get really good at playing the game together, go to the arcade, and just dominate. And that was one of the... It was probably the greatest non-fighting game experience I've ever had at an arcade.
Yeah, it is so enjoyable. The only game that tops it is NBA Jam Tournament Edition.
Yes.
By virtue of the enormous amount of secrets that were put into that game.
Yeah, that was good times.
Bill Clinton from downtown! Over here next, we got the Super NES version of Wolfenstein 3D.
Joy.
This one was shit. In fact, look here what it says here down at the bottom. We hate it. We think the game has been compromised. That was what the people from id Software said.
Yeah.
Specifically by Jay Wilbur, who was CEO at the time. They basically fucking neutered this thing.
One, it was very, very limited on the console, and two, it was just censored to hell.
Yeah. So. Yeah, they had to take out the blood, they had to censor all the Nazi references. I think they also had to take out the
dogs.
Did they take out the dogs, too?
Yeah, they turned the dogs into rats. Mm.
Yeah. And overall score, 78%. Verdict for a bricky-looking 3D Nazi blaster. It's really quite fun. Just don't mention the war, okay? Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, NBA Jam, by the way, got a 87.
Yeah.
All right. Fair. We got one of those ads for... Zappy New Year to you all. It looks like it's a total. It's one of those English specific things. They got one. Oh, they got something about Akira up there at the top. Virtual War, R-Type 3.
Probably imports.
Gargoyle's Quest 2, yeah. All right.
Akira, the game of the movie of the comic book.
Yeah. The game of the movie of the comic book. Of the paper. But, yeah. Oh, King of the Monsters 2. Yeah, I think I actually played a version of this game over here in the U.S.
Yeah, it was pretty much everywhere.
Come out over here.
Yeah.
Yeah, it came out on the Genesis, it came out on the SNES, obviously on the Neo Geo.
Yeah. Wasn't Ultraman one of the characters you could choose?
Well, he wasn't exactly Ultraman, but he totally looked like Ultraman. Yeah.
Okay, overall score 74%. Verdict, a suitably silly combat game that's bound to appeal to Godzilla fans, although it's very enjoyable. The joke wears a bit thin all too quickly. It's a sort of Rampage meets Street Fighter 2, but nowhere near as much fun as either.
Yeah.
Oh, and then we got an ad for Zap. It's one of those
aftermarket kind of
places you had to get stuff from.
Importers.
Yeah. Seeing over here, we got Pink Goes to Hollywood. They're referring, of course, to the Pink Panther.
Yeah. Never played that one, so couldn't tell you.
Vert, overall score 76%. Verdict, dedicated Panther fans will be tickled pink. Sorry, in parentheses. Others could do worse. Oh, and look at that! Edge Magazine.
Never encountered this one in my travels, but I've heard things.
Well, it's at Barnes & Noble. So, yeah. Here's the funny thing. Edge Magazine, just being introduced here, ironically, it's basically the one magazine other than Game Informer that's outlived all of the others.
So it's still a thing.
It's still going.
Wow.
Yeah, it's still going.
You know, Game Pro, Nintendo Power, Super Play, all gone.
Yeah. Game Informer and Edge are still going. I think Edge is the only one that's still
independent. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see. It looks like we got some player's guides. First one's for Solstice 2 Equinox.
Never played this one.
Huh?
I never played that one.
Nope, so. Never played that one either. That's 6 pages long. All right.
2, 4, 6.
Yeah. Here it is. Okay, here we go. Shadowrun. For Super NES, yes, this was the good Shadowrun.
Yeah.
A lot of this one was fun. Actually, I've gotten to talk with the lead designer on this particular game.
Oh.
Yeah, his name's Paul Kidd. He was part of this particular developer. Before this, he worked on a rather ambitious adventure game called, if I can remember what it was called. Hold on just a sec. I have to go to Wikipedia for this because I can't remember the name. Yeah, this is him, by the way. He's got a Wikipedia page right here. He's actually a writer now, but, it was, called Nightshade, and it was basically like a comedic superhero type thing.
Oh yeah, I think I remember this one.
Yeah, that was the game. He was writer, director, and lead designer on it. And then he's the lead designer for the SNES version of Shadowrun. He's got like websites and stuff. I've talked to him online. Nice guy. He's mostly a writer now, and a lot of stuff he does now is he likes to make tabletop RPGs.
Yeah.
He's a cool guy. But yeah, so this was the good Shadowrun. It was actually, for one thing, it was really funny.
Yeah. It was well written. It was a fun game to play. It wasn't too hard, but it was challenging.
Yeah, it was challenging. It was a lot of fun. Very, if you've played the recent Shadowrun games, it's very reminiscent of this.
Yeah.
And holy shit. I know the last part of this, the last part is supposed to be like a directions But it looks like somebody fell asleep on top of their keyboard.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think your L key is stuck, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, here we go. Total carnage.
Yeah, the very underwhelming port of a great arcade game.
Total Carnage, the arcade version, which was the spiritual successor to Smash TV, and was far more violent.
Yeah.
Yes.
In shocking ways, I have to admit. Yeah. God damn, just shit everywhere. Just things flew around, and not necessarily things you wanted to.
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah, that last boss too was it was basically a giant head that would like turn into Hitler at one point.
Yeah.
And then like a giant green skull and all that stuff. Oh, by the way, just so you know, in the arcade, you know, one of the things you did in that game was trying to collect all the keys so you could get to the Pleasure Dome. Yeah, yeah. Don't bother. You couldn't get into the Pleasure Dome.
No, they didn't actually finish it. It was never there.
Now, in later versions, they did have the Pleasure Dome, where you got to hang out with the Smash TV dudes and women.
Hmm.
And not much clothing. But, again, 90s.
Yeah.
Let's see. What do we got? We got more import and electronics sellers over the phone shit. See, we got. Then we got the Game Freak. That's the mail-in stuff.
Oh, some of it.
Mm-hmm. Let's see. I want to see if some of these are. See, dear Game Freak, I have heard of a really dodgy system called the UFO. Apparently, it can copy a Super Nintendo game onto a disc in 2 minutes. Do you have any information about this thing? And he answers down here. This is just one of the many illegal copying devices from the Far East that are imported into the UK and sold by specialist suppliers. Yeah, those are one of those things that pirated cartridges.
Yeah, it was an early version of a flash cart, basically. Except, you know, because flash memory was so expensive and floppy disks weren't, that was your medium.
Mm.
And then the game would fit.
Yeah.
Usually they
do. Number 5 says here, I heard the action replay damages the SNES. Well, here it says there's a version of the action replay that has 2 slots for working as an adapter. This is more than likely to blow a fuse in the SNES because it's drawing twice as much power. Oh, and of course, number 6, who on earth is Mr. Miyamoto? Shigeru Miyamoto is creator of Mario and Zelda and also designer of F-Zero, Mario Kart, Pilot Wings, and all the best Nintendo games. He's Nintendo Japan's most treasured asset.
Yeah.
Let's see. Blah, 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 blah. Dear Game Freak, I've seen Mortal Kombat 2 and it looks brill. Will it ever come out on the SNES? For the record, yes, it did.
Yes.
And pretty much unchanged. Yeah. Me and my pal are having a massive argument over which music is better, ActRaiser or Castlevania 4.
Ooh. Well, funny thing about that.
Let's see. Where is Mario Kart 2? Yeah, that's actually something a lot of us were asking back in the day.
Yeah.
We did get it. It was called Mario Kart 64, but...
Yeah, we just
had
to wait
a check. Let's see. Why, if ActRaiser 2 is so much better graphically, sonically, and gameplay-wise, does it slow down?
That would be because the SNES CPU is slow.
Yeah. Where are the following sequels we've all been waiting for? Axelay 2... Probotector 4, Castlevania 5.
None of which we ever got.
Numbers is here. Castlevania 5... .. if only.
Yeah. Yeah, Dracula X didn't count.
Let's see. Guy down here asking about the Super CD. How come there are two Aladdin games, one by Capcom and the other by Virgin? It says here because both Sega and Nintendo acquired the licenses.
Yeah.
Why do Electronic Arts release their games on the Mega Drive first?
Because they don't have to pay for cartridges.
Yeah. Let's see. When the 64-bit Nintendo appears, will the SNES be phased out just like the SNES was? Yeah, did. it says here, number 7. Remember, the SNES has been around for 10 years now. The SNES is still a baby in comparison. It's likely that we'll see games being produced for the SNES for many, many more years yet.
It was.
Depends.
Until 1998.
Yeah. Least. So another 4 years.
Yeah.
Let's see. Here's one. What does Ryu and Ken's yellow fireball do? That was like a
yellow fireball.
Oh, he's just like a Hadouken where it would occasionally come out as yellow instead of blue.
Yeah, that was more red. A palette glitch, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was just a program bug. FX Trucks.
No, until Super Turbo, and then it became
blue. Where it actually enveloped you in flames. All right, Daydream. Oh, this looks like one of those things where they would just ask some dude to smoke weed and come up with games. Let's see. I would love to see another Super Mario Brothers game, perhaps Super Mario World 2. The game will be a simultaneous two-player where Mario and Luigi can help each other out on full screen, no split screen, as well as scrolling bits.
We wouldn't get that kind of a game until much, much later, but we did get it.
It'd be well into the new millennium.
Yeah.
My daydream is to see Castlevania 5 released with amazing graphics and possibly also featuring a woman with a sword. It would also have brilliant Mode 7 and surround sound, too. Well, you did get a dude with a sword, and he kind of looked like a woman, so...
Yeah.
More things in another word mode 7 like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we have Bloodstained, which is has a woman in it, and she's got a sword.
Yeah. Speaking of mode 7, we got the cheat section. So we got ActRaiser 2, Macross, WWF Royal Rumble, Sunset Riders.
That was a fantastic
game. Street Fighter 2 Turbo.
Was there really any cheats for that?
It
wasn't much. Yeah,
it was about how get the best ending the easy way.
No.
Says, nope, absolutely not. I refuse. Stuff. Nope, absolutely not. I refuse. No more Street Fighter 2 tips. Never again. Ever, 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 ever. Now, don't get me wrong. I love the game and all that, but we're just about squeezed every single last drop of it onto the poor little cart, and, well, I'm afraid there's nothing left. But since you put it that way, why don't you try this code for great endings the easy way? First off, all the special moves down our then set the difficulty to the genocidally easy 1-star and play through to the end of the game. Now sit back and watch your reward. Oh, and zombies ate my neighbors.
Yeah.
Mm. See, what do we got? Oh, we got more cheats. This one for Mortal Kombat. Super Mario All-Stars, Trottlers, Action Replay. Nigel Mansell, World Champion, Chip.
Yeah.
Oh, look at it. Find 13 new worlds on Super Mario All-Stars, The Lost Levels. Well, 13. Sort of. Sort I think it just mirrored them or something. Mm. Rock and Roll Racing. That was an early Blizzard title. And a lot of fun. With chiptune-y.
Really good with the MSU one.
Chip. Yep. A lot of chiptune-y versions of classic hard rock music.
Yep. And a Henry Mancini song. For
Super Tennis, Flashback, Pilot Wings. All right.
Can't tell you how many hours I lost to Pilot Wings.
And we got Super Play Superstore, Game Master, and of course the Nintendo Hotline.
Yay. We will take lots of your money and talk very slowly while we do it.
Because we are intentionally trying to draw out as much music. Yeah. They were trained to do that shit, too. Like, that was in the fucking manual. You had to talk as slowly as you could without being overly suspicious.
Yeah.
Oh, here we go. Reader. Here's the real reader stuff. Oh, and they got envelope art, too. Yay, envelope art! I miss envelope art.
Yeah, you can't really do that with email.
No. I mean, Game Informer still does it. Though it's not really on email anymore. I mean, it's not an envelope anymore. It's just stuff on DeviantArt. Let's see. Oh, here's the first one. Oh, this is worth reading here. The first mail. Okay. I have a criticism of Nintendo. With the release of their new console, what do they expect all of us to do? Sell our SNESs and buy their new machine after many of us have only had them for a few years? Those of us who do keep our Super Nintendos, well, the same thing happened to them as the NES owners, with less games being released and it being neglected by companies, etc. It's crazy. It's like trying to keep up with the latest make of car. I think Nintendo should have stuck to their original idea of releasing an add-on to the Super Nintendo to update it later. Then we got another mail about the same topic. After seeing what has happened to the poor old NES, i.e. obsolete 30-pound games being cut, I can't help wondering what might happen to the SNES when Project Reality is released. Those you don't know, Project Reality was, of course, the Nintendo 64. The same thing might happen, i.e. obsolete 30-pound games being cut. If your predictions are correct, I may be trading in my new NES for 30 pounds, scrounging 200 pounds more to get Project Reality. That is not only bad news for me, but for you too, i.e. obsolete 30-page no game reviews. Yeah, kinda. Because Super Play Replay would basically go down the tubes in 97. With the magazine being relegated to having to sit next to a sad Spectrum mag on the newsstand for the rest of its days. Wow.
That went to a really weird place.
Says here, the answer they gave was one day the SNES will be obsolete. Progress is like that, but it's going to take a very long time. The Spectrum and Commodore 64 are still being used today with new software coming out despite being 8 years out of date. It takes a long time for a machine to be superseded because so many people will still own them. So your SNES will still be a popular supported machine for years and years. You'll get tired of it and want to upgrade to a Project Reality machine long before it's a tired old useless wreck with no software.
I think they had much higher hopes for the N64 than...
Well, I think kind of what might have killed them was the just numerous delays of the 64.
Let's see.
Well, that and fucking the third party's over.
That didn't help either.
Let's see. My name is Peter Fay. I always read your bag. I have two questions for you. Will there ever be another Zelda game for the Super NES? No, there will not.
Well, that hurts me right here. Just,
Link to the Past is as good as it
can. Let's see. Here's a letter over here on the opposite page. This: we are very impressed by the presentation of your magazine. Since reading your anime column, we have become firm fans of Japanese animation. We both own Super Nintendos and would like to comment on how helpful your magazine has been. It has helped us complete Mario All-Star, Super Mario Kart, and Mode 7 has helped us very much as well. One thing we would like to know is, why do you review so many Japanese games? We are getting sick and tired of the same old formula. Too many games are trying to take off main characters, and the games they create are complete crap. For example, Bubsy the Bobcat. So when are they going to stop publishing these crap games that clog up the market? Why not try to bring out more flight sims and sports games? Oh, you poor, poor child. You'll be longing for those games again in just a few years.
Yeah.
Let's see. And next up, something about dudes slagging off Sheffield.
It's a very British thing, apparently.
Here's one that might be worth looking at. I own an SNES with a collection of games, and I am beginning to think that Nintendo are bonkers. Over the last 6 months, there have been a sudden rise in the popularity of the Japanese role-playing game. This is mainly due to manga. Again, we're talking about anime when they mention that, and the coverage through magazines such as Super Play and Manga Mania, the new genre. Looking at the success of Zelda 3 alone in Britain and the appeal of games like Legend of the Mystical Ninja on import, it makes me wonder why more role-playing games aren't released here in Britain. The best-selling SNES game in Japan is Dragon Quest V, which outsold the Mario games as well as the infamous Street Fighter II. Even though it has been out more than a year in Japan, there is no evidence or plans to release it here in Britain. If the British SNES owner is given the chance to play these sort of games, they will create a demand for them, if not a market, so they are destined to sell. Breath of Fire, Secret of Mana, King's Quest V, and Dragon Quest V, with decent ad campaigns, would sell the SNES in bucket loads. This is one of the many problems for Nintendo. They really should consider games at a lower price because more people will buy them. Also, like Sega, they should consider re-releasing the older SNES titles at a lower price. For example, Super Mario World would be for £20, Super Mario Kart for £20, and Street Fighter II for £25. Clever marketing tactics like this would end the console battle with Sega and then would be ready for the Nintendo CD Dream Machine. It is just, man, it is really I don't want to use the word unnerving to go back and read these old letter columns and see what their concerns and stuff was. The internet really helped with a lot of this stuff, is what I'm going to say.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Close to the end of the back of the book.
All right. Let's see. Yeah, I think we've reached the back of the magazine.
Yeah.
That's the
subscribe.
Which, if I remember correctly, that was you basically said if this would be great for any other magazine.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Considering the reviews that we went through last time.
Yeah.
I'm surprised though they were more consistent in this one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right.
It's like the person who scored it and the person who wrote it seemed to actually be the same person.
And then we got a bunch of ads, and then they got the supermarket section, which is where basically they gave away ad space.
Yeah.
Again, this was before we had the internet, so.
Yeah.
And then they had the subscribe page, what they were going to get next month, and that was it.
Yeah.
All ending with an ad on Total Carnage at the back. Well, that was fun. We got to do that again.
I'll find another issue to go through.
All right. Well. Well, that brings our this episode of Let's Weekend to its end. Before we sign out, we want to impose upon anyone who is listening, if you are an American, please go vote for the love of God.
Yes.
Yes.
If you're living in a swing state, vote for Hillary Clinton. If you're living in a safe state, well, you can pretty much vote for whoever you want. I don't really give a shit.
Yeah.
just go vote. I don't care who you vote for. Just vote.
Yeah.
And also, we want to remind all our listeners that you can, in fact, email us if you wish to speak to us, tell us something, ask us a question, all the things that go with it. You can do that at letsweekenders@gmail.com. We've actually got a link for it in the show notes now, so you don't have to hear me stuttering out alphabetically the whole name. So
Just clicky the thing and click you right there.
So with that, I have been your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. And for Filippo D'Onofrio, Patrick Mifflin, and the recently asleep Chris Logi, I'd like to tell all of you good night, get some sleep, and we'll see you after the election. If the world hasn't blown up yet.